Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. All right, so welcome to our late start. This is going to be an interesting day. I've got Bianca Von Krieg, who I think is on the line right now. I'll find out in just a second. It's a different number than I have here. And so, well, I'll try it. If it's somebody else, then we'll find out very quickly. Anyway, so I've got Bianca, I've got Tara D. who's going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour Central Time for our pup date. Our pet report, and our special guest who's new to the show is Brianna Latipo, and she's an author and, you know, has an incredible story, like a lot of us do, of tumultuous childhoods and recovery and healing, and it should be really interesting to have her on. But let's get the call going here. Let's make sure I have my guest and not to somebody else. Bianca, is that you? We got you live now.
Yes, it is, Greg. Hi.
Cool. Welcome back. Good to have you back on the show.
Good to be here.
All right. So for folks that don't know, this is our progressive, you know, I say progressive report from the left coast. We'll think of a good title because I'd love to have you on regularly. But if we can sort of reintroduce you, give yourself or give a little bit of background, and then let's delve into the issues, you know, things that a lot of shows don't talk, because I'm way beyond conservative. I'm way over with the founders. And Bianca's progressive. And yet there's a lot of things that we talk about that we agree on or see the other side in ways that are very different than people expect, which is why I like having her on. So let's get you reintroduced, and then let's dive into the issues.
Well, I'm a transgender woman, actress, and I ran against Nancy Pelosi, and I'm going to do it again.
How'd that go? How far did you get when you ran against her? How'd that work?
not as quite as far as I like, but I do consider it a success. I mean, we did take her down. It's widely considered in both parties that it was our efforts that did that. I mean, prior to me getting in the race, she was spending a fraction of what she normally does, which is like $2 or $3 million. She had to kick her fundraising up 600% to compete with me. And we spent
That's a victory right there. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I mean, of all the people to take on, the Speaker of the House, who has worldwide, you know, name and face recognition, he didn't pick an easy target. He didn't find a little district somewhere in California that nobody's ever heard of. You went right for the top.
We go big out here, Greg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and for those that don't know, I spent 30 years out in the Bay Area, out in San Francisco. So I know the area well. I think I was even a tour guide. We went by Nancy Pelosi's house a few times. It's up in Pacific States. It's really beautiful up there. And it's such a contrast from the Tenderloin, which I think is also in her district still, isn't it? You got these two unbelievable contrasts?
Oh, yeah, just about most of San Francisco is in her district. There was some redistricting done last year, which happened right during the election. Yeah. And she still hasn't changed her district. She's her district is now 11. On the answer machine, it still says 12. I mean, the staff is unbelievable there. But, they lost some of the working class people in the Hunter's View of Bay Point area, but
right.
Picked up, San Francisco State, you know, on the western low end.
Oh, gee, there's a friendly audience. Well, that's where they had Riley Gaines, you know, and she got attacked and was, I guess, you know, kidnapped for about 3 hours there. So San Francisco State, I know it well. I can't say I spent much time there, but it's a big campus. Actually, my claim to fame for education was going to Ohlone College in Fremont. And that you once have an underrated school, and that's when radio broadcasting. And so all the production stuff that I do here, in fact, I forgot to give you your welcoming round of applause. Let's do that. But I have all these buttons and music, and I learned it all at Ohlone College. I should play. I'm going to get my ear check and play it sometime. Because here I was 56 when I went there, right? And I was 57 when I started in radio. I'm 63 now. And it was hysterical to have, you know, my mature, deep voice, you know, coming out of this college radio. And of course, they had the speakers going out right to the campus. So everybody heard, you know, KOHM, I said, can't we? Oh, I can't believe I forgot my call letters. Anyway, but you hear this deep voice, you hear this like kids, right? And now we've got KOMI Radio, you know, Ohlone College, Fremont, California. And now we have 21 pilots, you know, this is Greg, your DJ. I mean, I was a college DJ. It was hysterical. But San Francisco State.
Well, you do have a nice radio voice.
Well, thank you. Yeah, this is why God didn't make me an Olympic pole vaulter. So, you know, we take our gifts and use them appropriately. I'd rather have the radio voice.
I guess you could say that one about a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just don't think of all the things you don't have to do because you're not good at it. Okay? I don't have to be those guys that go up the power lines. Okay? I'm not good at that. I don't have to do that. In fact, I actually met, this is kind of interesting, the guys that do the construction and their maintenance work on the Golden Gate Bridge. And I talked to them. They're good. They're about to go up the elevator.
Yeah.
Me, I'm like walking. I'm walking across the bridge. One of the things I did many times. And it's always two guys. You know me. I have to talk to everybody. So it's like these are big guys, really big, strong guys in coveralls, overalls, because it's cold on the bridge. They're about to go up the elevator to the top of the tower.
Oh, yeah.
I said, you guys. Oh, yeah, right. I said, can I go? I said, no. Oh, okay.
It's crazy cold, and those winds are dangerous. You know,
they are.
And the bridge has to be painted 24 hours a day, so they just. Mm-hmm. Start at one end, go to the other, and then just go back all over again.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Here's one of the weird things. When they took out the lead paint and they started painting it with non-lead paint, they saved, I don't know how many thousands of tons of weight on the bridge that's not there anymore because it's not lead paint. A little tidbit for you. It's tour guide stuff. Anyway, but the point is, so the guys, I asked them, I said, do you ever get afraid of heights? And they said, we never think about it. So there are people that's a gift.
They probably will now, thanks to you.
No, I don't think so. They still have their job. They still went up the elevator. But because I'm sure everybody asked them that question, right?
Why shouldn't I be afraid of heights? Oh, wait. It's a long way down.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Why did I take this job anyway? Yeah. Anyway. So I want to talk to this. Bianca and I talked about a bunch of issues off the air, so I don't know how many we'll get to, but it's just fun to go over all this. But I like to talk about things that no one else. I don't want to just talk about news. Everybody's talking about news. But there's something really interesting that I think is happening. I want to get on to Trump and Robert Kennedy because that's a particular fascination for me as the only two non-deep state candidates. And I was thinking about this before you came on. You know, you've got liberals like, Robert Kennedy's a liberal. Okay, liberal Democrat, classic liberal Democrat. Yeah. I would be considered an anti-federalist. You know, when the Federalists were writing all the papers about how wonderful the Constitution was, and we got a bunch of guys who say, oh, it's going to give them too much power. It's going to screw things up. They shouldn't be borrowing money and all that stuff. That would be me. And I would have been one of those anonymous guys back then as an anti-federalist. So I'm not a conservative. But conservatives, you know, love this country. Liberals love this country. Progressives, I think, like Bernie Sanders. You know, I don't agree with the thing Bernie Sanders says, but he's honest. He's sincere. He believes in what he's saying.
Nobody's got his hand in his pocket, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But he's making money. He's a good capitalist, too, so there's a little bit of hypocrisy in there. But that's okay. Everybody's entitled to
a bit. He's worth like a million two tops.
That's nothing. Yeah, I mean, that's the – but well, yeah. What I see
– that's a drop in the bucket for Pelosi.
Please, yeah. I told you about my singing Telegram story with Nancy Pelosi. Did I ever tell you that one?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Way back in my impetuous youth, when Nancy Pelosi was first elected to Congress, her victory party was at the old North Beach restaurant. What's that classic one there? I think it's called the North Beach restaurant. The big Italian
one. There's
a
bunch of classic ones.
Yeah, it's when everybody sits on the outside.
On the corner.
Right,
oh, yeah. I think I know
that
one.
Right. Anyway. It was 87. I was 27, and I was working. I was trying to get into flying schools and trying to get my airline career going, which never actually worked out. But I'm working singing telegrams, and they said, well, you're going to go sing for a woman who just got elected to Congress. I'm like, okay, great. So I end up sitting in her lap doing the show, right? And of course, the cameras are clicking.
Oh, gosh.
Somewhere out there. If you ever meet anybody that says, hey, does anybody have a picture of the singing telegram, the guy that sat in Nancy Pelosi's lap when she first was elected? That's me. Now I want a picture of it. So that's my claim.
I'll have to get my team to look that one up because
it's there. Someone was there, you know, and either they have it or the kids have it. Now it's probably a family heirloom. And I can't believe this guy said it, Nancy.
I hope.
I don't know who she was, but I'll never forget the look on her face. Those big brown eyes were flashing like crazy. Right, she's looking at me in absolute horror, and I'm thinking, this is great. This is a great show. Everybody else is loving it. Anyway, what I wanted to get to. Since this is why I have you on, because we do have fun. What I want to talk about is...
I don't think I can unsee that now. Thank you, Greg.
Sorry. Well, it's amazing how visual radio gets. For those that don't know, we really
do. It's more her than you in that thing, and I just
okay.
I can't even eat Italian food anymore. That's how bad she is. Like,
oh no! Well, don't do that. But I don't see really. Yeah. I don't think of her as Italian. She doesn't strike me as very Italian. I mean,
I know she's not. I mean, she doesn't like embrace that at all. But still, it just.
I mean, does she go to Mass?
Yeah, I don't know.
Does she go to the Blessed Officiate?
No,
we're
actually in the same church.
Really?
Supposedly. And
Can you reveal which one, or is that a daughter there a couple times?
Or,
which church? Can you tell me which church, or is that a security issue?
I don't want to make it a point of contention, you know.
Okay, that's fine. No, that's why I asked.
Archbishop kind of like right where I like him right now. And,
okay. Oh, I know the church.
Hating her.
I know exactly which one. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean it's the Catholic Church. We're I'm talking about the parish, you know. And but yeah, that was one of my better triumphs is getting the Archbishop
to endorse you or what?
Well, I don't think he'll do that anytime soon. He's kind of got a thing for transgender people, but yeah, I mean at least I got him to hate her, and that was a pretty big score.
Oh, wow. Well,
in our book. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, you know, it does kind of show that people do like outsiders in their leadership. We've seen this again, time and time again with Reagan, with Trump. Mm-hmm. And I hope we'll see it with Robert Kennedy, too, who's led a pretty distinguished life in liberal circles so far, and he hasn't, because you know I think that's one thing that Trump and I have in common is that we don't give a shit what happens to us afterwards.
Yeah.
Most politicians are always kind of playing a bunch of angles. That's why they never really go like balls out, as we say. They're always like, you know, well, you know, maybe I lose the election, fine, I'll go get a lobbying job and make a bunch of money or something. They've always, or I'll get appointed to this or that. Or that's what they're angling for. Trump doesn't care. Trump's like, I see the system as being wrong, and I'm going to try and correct it as best as I see fit. Unfortunately, he doesn't have all the facts in that area, but at least he's trying. And, you know, Robert Kennedy's going to run because, you know, Joe Biden's brain has turned to mush and he has to be replaced. It should have happened a long time ago.
Well, here's the thing, though, and I was thinking of this morning, that this is basically Obama's third term. He's running the country from behind the scenes with Susan Rice and maybe Michelle and Hillary. I'm not sure. You probably know better than I do. But the problem is that Obama...
I certainly wish that was true. I loved Obama, but that's not what's happening, I believe.
Who's pulling the strings then?
It's his staff. It's like the OEOB.
What's that?
That's who's running the West Wing. The old executive office building. It's that big building, that big gothic-like building next to the White House, and it houses...
Yeah. Yep.
There's 1,100 people who work on the president's staff in the White House and in the OEOB, and it's those people who are running the show. And some of them are pretty smart. That's why we've had our advances in cold fusion, which is going to destroy the Middle East in about 10 years, and save the rest of the world. But, nobody elected them to run to be president. And they have a duty to stand up and say, you know, I'm sorry, but this, you know, as much as I like this man, he's gone. He's senile. And it gives me no pleasure to say that. But, you know, all you have to do is just look at tapes of him, you know, as vice president and look at him now. And he's like it's a ghost of his former self.
How does it benefit these people? Because and this is why it's really great to have you on, because it's not insight I could get from conservatives, because we all think it's Obama, you know, behind the scenes. But but most of the people that are there are Obama's old staff. So are they
mindset? And some of them are Bernie's too. A lot of them are Bernie's.
Do they get along?
Because, you know,
the Obama and the Bernie people.
Yeah, I mean, Obama was is considerably more moderate than Sanders is. But he's certainly left compared to people like Pelosi, who is basically a dino.
Is that an acronym?
But
that stands for something,
a
right?
lot of the
What's
Bernie staff
for?
Left.
Yeah. Okay.
Democrat in name only. They also use the term rhino.
As opposed to a rhino. Okay, gotcha. So
yeah.
There's a Democratic.
So
it's
basically these moderate deep state candidates. And folks, if you're listening at home, it's real easy to find a deep state candidate because he's taken money from both sides of the spectrum.
Right.
You can go on the FEC database. They have a really – type in the person's name, the politician's name, and you can see exactly who's giving them money. And if they're getting money from both sides of people, they're deep state.
Yeah.
Really,
well, that's really what – that's where I started to lead to. So FEC, that's Federal Elections Commission for our new folks. And we have a lot of international listeners too, so I want to make sure that they get this as well. Apparently something's happened with Apple Podcasts. We've just taken off on Apple. Don't know why, can't explain it, but we're gaining a whole bunch there, so that's really good news. What I was sort of starting with a little bit ago, and this is what I want you – but we're sort of into the topic now, but there's a real split in this country. Everybody says, you know, it's not conservatives and liberals. It's not Republicans and Democrats. The real split in this country is the deep state.
The have and the have not.
Everybody. No, maybe not. Let me do mine and then let's see what you think. But it's really the deep state and everybody else. And the way I define the difference between deep state and everybody else, the deep state, like you said, they're taking money from both sides. They don't give a damn about this country. They don't care that we have $32 trillion in debt. They don't care that they're waging a fake war in Ukraine and killing 300,000 people as long as they make money. The neocons, doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican.
$1 billion a week.
That's ridiculous. That's insane.
What
could we do with
a week?
We could, we could do a voucher, a health choice plan for that, and we could do a bunch of things with that money. Yeah, exactly. The $7 trillion that went to Afghanistan for no reason, and then Brandon surrenders. You know, I mean, and I go back to Iraq, and I'll take even Bosnia under Clinton and the Reagan military. Why? Who's the last country that's the country's the most likely to
attack us?
Remember
the last guy to stand up for the Trump of the 90s? Remember that guy, Ross Perot? I was just thinking about him the other day.
Oh, yeah. I remember Ross Perot.
He stood up to that and he said,
"Yep."
He said, don't go to Iraq. It's basically just a kind of an ego operation.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. And he booked a whole hour of Donahue. Which for younger viewers is like that. Yeah, well, other people probably won't. He was the godfather of talk shows. He started it all. And he booked a whole hour. It cost him like millions of dollars. And Donahue just let him speak. And he did that because he had love for the country. And he insisted on telling people the truth about Iraq. And, this whole like plight for protect other people's freedom was just a red herring.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
and, I honor the people that serve and I respect the people that serve. And, I certainly thank them for their service. I just wish they wouldn't have to go to the places they're sent because the places they're sent, Afghanistan is not going to nuke us. Iraq is not going to nuke us. They're not going to, they don't have a navy. They're not going to sail. They're not going to land on our shores.
No.
They don't have an airborne force. They're not going to, fly down. And if they have a terrorist cell, then we can go with our special forces and kill them. We don't have to have a war to do it.
Yeah.
You look at Trump killed two people, basically changed the course of Middle East history by killing two people, al-Baghdadi and Soleimani. That was it. Mm-hmm. It was done, and life goes on. But so back to my original point here, the deep state, the people that care only about themselves and what I would call the genuine, the genuine politicians that care about the country. And they can be from green to Christian conservative, but they have different ways of making the country great. Okay. And that's what we talk about.
Yeah.
But I find far more in common with you, even on the issues we would disagree with, than I would with a deep state person. And I call them the GOP goobers is what I'm calling them now, because they don't care.
Yeah, they've corrupted both parties.
Yeah.
The deep state has infiltrated both parties, and you can see this all the time. You're seeing this with Republicans resenting Mitch McConnell and the emergence of the Freedom Caucus, which is like almost the antithesis of the Progressive Caucus. And even though they're much more fun, they're much more fun to deal with.
Well, you know what you should really do? What would be fascinating is to have a Progressive Caucus Freedom Caucus Summit. Just get together.
I'd love to get down with Chip Roy. He's a great. He's a.
Yeah.
I love his style.
Well,
time I watch this guy on TV, I think he rocks.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to do somebody that has a really strong position, even if you disagree with it completely. And here's the funny thing. This is some little insight from my limited government experience in the University of Massachusetts when I was in the student government. I was actually a lobbyist for the student government. That's where I learned a lot of my skills for what I do now, going to the state of Massachusetts, the state house, and presenting our budget figures and lobbying for a bigger budget for my university. And so I learned a lot of things.
Wow.
When you do it, yeah, I was like 18, 19 years old.
They let
a
student do that job? That's pretty awesome.
We were the first. My friend Ken and I were the first to actually do that. We created the student lobbying team out of nothing. And we had a mentor named Ken Mazakowski. And I'm sure he's passed away now. He was about, 10, 15 years older than we were then. And I'm 63, so he'd be in his 80s now. Hopefully he's still around. But the guy was a genius. But he's one of these genius, nerdy guys that was never going to get anywhere because he was nerdy. And he didn't look the part of a great politician. You know, if Donald Trump looked like Pee Wee Herman, how successful would he be in politics? You know,
or
Lou
Costello. That's kind of what they did to Perot, too. Remember, like, it was on all
yeah.
the – they were making fun of his ears and things like that, and it was just mm-hmm. it was very embarrassing for the country, to treat somebody like that who spent so much of his own. The Bible says, the person who gives more of themselves is more blessed than a rich man who gives a penny.
Yeah.
And he really gave of himself because he felt strongly about it, and all they could, and he was right. Course, and what did they do? They just, the deep state got in there and just said, he's got funny ears. You don't want that to be a president. Like, God.
Yeah, or Trump's a Nazi, or Bernie Sanders is going to destroy the country, or all whatever. I don't know what they said about Bernie, but
yeah, Bernie is not a communist, and the progressives are not communists. I'd be the first person to end the communist.
Well, let's talk about the difference.
We just
outline the difference.
America to look like Europe. We want America to be like Europe, or worst case scenario, Canada, where everything works and it's clean and people are happy, as opposed to the kind of biting misery that we see now and this kind of kick you in the teeth capitalism. There's a middle ground. There's a middle ground there, and it starts with programs like universal basic income. That's the panacea.
Okay.
The panacea.
How would that work
money
exactly?
From the billionaire class. Yeah, I'm going to tell you. It's like money from the billionaire class. For me, anybody with over 9 digits of net worth is on my radar.
Okay.
And you take take the money that you need from them, and then you give it to the middle and lower classes to help even it out so that they can afford their home, they can afford their children's education, they can afford the necessities of life and have a little left over to put for their golden years. And, we have statistics that show 40% of Americans, 40% can't afford a $500 emergency setback.
Yep. I heard it was 400. It's actually dropped. Yeah. It's bad.
Yeah. It's really bad. And it's like America is not working, but it can mm-hmm. be fixed. But nobody wants to do the problems because that means making the people who cause the problems pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to do that. We see it in San Francisco right now, with the homeless, and it's just getting. And they say, "Well, what can we do?" It's real easy.
Mm-hmm.
Take the money from the 77 billionaires who live out of the 156 who live in California. 77 of them live right here in the 7x7 in San Francisco. Take it from them, and we have 40,000 vacant units in the city. 40,000. That can
how do you have a
homeless problem?
How do you have a homeless problem with 40,000?
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like they're trying to put this on the cops. That's what they're trying to do.
Okay.
Trying to say we need, it's a police matter. We need to stop them from using drugs. But everybody who's on the ground in that situation, all those nonprofits are all saying the same thing as me, is that people are using because they're in despair. Many of them would rather be dead right now. And that's the problem we need to fix first. When they have a home, when they have like some kind of meaningful vocation, they generally don't go out and, you know, pull things off the shelves in Walgreens or do drugs or any of those things. It's been proven time and time again. They've tried universal basic income in some pilot cities. The first one was in Stockton, and everyone, and all the critics are saying, oh, they're going to go buy drugs and all that. Wrong. They spent that money on paying down debt and buying life necessities. And now they're trying it in San Jose, too. And this program needs to go nationwide, and it needs to go now. Money solves 99% of socioeconomic problems. Race, all that stuff is solved with money.
Race is a false issue.
Everything else is just noise.
Americans, we don't care. You know, there are poor people of every color. There are poor people of both sexes. There are poor people of every gender, of every, you know, nationality. There's poor people all over the place.
Yeah.
For different reasons. So
there's 20 million poor black people. You know how many poor white people are? 40.
What, eight? Yeah, exactly. I was going to say 60, but
40 million.
Yeah.
So it's like they've been trying to start a race war for years, hoping that it'll just solve their problems, but we're not really buying it anymore.
No, we got better things to do.
So,
you know, you think about all the people that go to work together in the different companies, the people that serve in the military together, the people that do all kinds of things. But the difference, again, the difference, just like the difference in politics, is between the deep state, you know, the intelligence folks, the secret committees, the defense people, the neocons, all those folks that are interested in their own power, nothing else. I wrote an article you might be interested in called The Nation of Government, describing Washington, D.C. as its own country with their own passports, their own currency, their own, you know, identifications, their own credentials, things like that. And the states basically serve them and pay for, like, colonies, you know, of D.C. But just as that is a difference. You know, the folks that are in the upper echelons of society, the absolute, the highest income folks, they don't understand. You know, people that have, you know, if you're a trust fund baby and, you know, you've been handed a good college career and a good job, you've never really struggled, I understand that you don't understand what life is like for 99% of the other people out there. However, and here's the big difference. You and I both want the same things. More money in people's pockets, more money they can spend, but we have completely different ways. We have complete. No, this is why I'm so glad you brought this up, because I would do it in a completely different way. And yet we both want exactly the same things. Well, gee, Greg, how can an anti-federalist and a progressive want the same things? Easy. We want the best for people. Mm-hmm. Now, the way I would do it, the first thing I would do is to eliminate any withholding of income. I'm not giving people stuff. I'm just changing the way the system works, but it actually ends up with the same result. People get more money. You know how you have to, everybody has money withdrawn from their paycheck and withholding tax. Ultimately, I want to get rid of the withholding tax. But the first thing I would do is get rid of the withholding tax up until the point where you earn your standard deduction, because your standard deduction is what people get back, but they have to wait a year for it. Mm-hmm. So you work in 2023, you're not going to get your 2023 money back until 2024. Well, that's crazy. When you file your income tax return, you're going to get your standard deduction back. It's going to be taken off the taxable income. So what I'm saying is, don't tax that income in the first place. Nobody should have any money withdrawn from their paycheck until they've earned the standard deduction amount, $12,000, $13,000, whatever it is. Then you start taking withholding income, because that money actually will be taxed. It's not coming back. Those are the taxes you're going to pay. But if people make what's the average salary now, $35,000 roughly?
Just double minimum wage, and the first two digits, the dollar digits of minimum wage, and that's the yearly wage in thousands of dollars. So it's like, if you're making $15 an hour, then you're making $30,000 a year, roughly speaking.
Oh, so that's how minimum wage works? Okay, so I'm just trying to think of the average salary. It's not that
high. That's just how,
Okay, well, let's just say it makes my math easier. So if you're making $35,000 a year and the standard deduction is $12,000, it's going to take you almost a third of the year to make enough money for the income for your standard deduction. So if there was no money taken out of your paycheck, you'd have all that money up front, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to wait for it to come back.
Well,
next year.
I mean, you've got it thought out. But
yeah. So the point is that
people
get their money.
I believe, don't quote me on this, but I believe people can opt out of withholding.
I don't think so, unless you become an independent contractor.
Yeah, they can put a – maybe I'm thinking of independent contractors, but there wasn't
– Or you can have a
– to do that.
Yeah, you can have a lot of deductions, but very little is withheld, if any. Yeah, you take 99 deductions.
You just have to do your own taxes later. But I've always been a fan of something that Reagan actually wanted to do called free file. And that means you don't file any tax returns. The government gives you a bill and saying this is what you owe. And you can either accept it or you can challenge it. The idea that we have to do the government's work for them is kind of preposterous.
Well, they already have the information anyway.
We have to figure out what we owe.
I mean, it's really become a lie detector test.
They have that information anyway. They've had it for decades. Because
they already know. They know how much you make. Your employer has reported it. So why do we have to? Why do we have to file a return for information that they already know, right? And it makes no sense. You know, and so what I'm saying, Jackie's.
And then if you get it wrong, they come and arrest you. You know?
Yeah, and yet they already knew, you know. So I don't want the government preparing my taxes. But here's the other thing that there's a much bigger plan. And so, again, the three things I would do. First of all, in withholding. Second thing I would do is convert Social Security to a privatized system like Chile has, where the money doesn't go to a government account, it goes to your account. And you still can't touch it to you like 62, 65, whatever. But it's your money, and it stays in your family. It's not government issued. And that way the government's completely out of the pension business, because it's Social Security, which is like a second income tax, as opposed to individual security, which is what I'd be in favor of. So that's the second thing. First withholding, second Social Security. But the big one is a constitutional amendment that takes away the power of Congress to borrow money. This is the game changer. See, everything. See, where I disagree with your plan is taking from some people to give to others. And what I'm saying is you don't have to do that. If you take away the power from the deep, which I do want to take away from, you take away their power to borrow money. Here's what happens. As soon as you take away the power of Congress to borrow money, then everything changes. They have to live within the budget like the states do. All right. So there's no inflation anymore because they can't print money to cover expenses. There's no central bank. This is in my provision too. So the Fed goes away.
Well,
so go ahead. But I just want to pull the scenario through. So if you get rid of inflation, you get rid of the ability to borrow. The debt gets paid down as the treasury bills come due. The interest comes down. Eventually, Derek, our financial guy, we figured about 30, 40 years, national debt will be gone. All right. So you have deflation, which means everybody's money is worth more. So you're not giving people more money. You're making the same money they have worth more, which means the prices go down. And the transfer of wealth from the Fed, from the private, central banks and the government back to the people would be huge. Now, I don't know if it corresponds exactly to your guaranteed income, but to me, it makes a lot more sense. And it doesn't cost anything. We just take away a power of Congress that they never should have had. And so you do those three things. You stop Congress borrowing, you privatize Social Security, and you end withholding. And that's how I do it. And I don't know if they correspond exactly, but I think that it's the same result. It puts a ton more money in people's pockets and makes their money more valuable. Go ahead, and then I want to get to my colleague.
Well, I was just going to say it doesn't account for, unforeseen circumstances. Like, let's say a tornado takes out, the breadbasket in the Midwest, or we're invaded by Mexico or something by military forces, and we have to mobilize our economy and pay people to build tanks and things like that. So it doesn't really
but that could
allow
anyway
for that kind of emergency spending that needs to happen.
And that's a common thing. People say, well, what about a pandemic? What about an emergency? So the first thing that happens in an emergency like COVID, and we can talk about this too, is that the government takes your rights away illegally. I wrote an article that the cure for COVID was freedom. Early treatments would have taken care of most of COVID very quickly. It would have been over with by June of 2020. So I would disagree with that we can do it. We don't, what you do is you do what everybody else does. You have a savings account. Government uses the treasury for what it's supposed to be for, which is to put money away for a rainy day. Florida has a bunch of money because we've had a good economy. So that's how I would do it. So again, same basic idea. We want to cover emergencies. We want to have people, for natural disasters, hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, fires, things like that. And we can talk about Maui. But it's a different, it's a different approach for how we want to handle it. All right, let's get Bianca in line. One of my favorite regular callers here. I'm with Bianca Von Krieg on the left coast. What's up, Bianca?
No, you don't have to have any taxes taken out of your check. I don't have any taken out of mine.
Okay.
Lucky guy.
So how do you do it?
When you file your – do a form. And when you file your taxes, then you at the time – If you owe something, then you owe them. No, deduction, tax, filing taxes is good because you have deductions along the way that's legal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not saying get rid of deductions. In fact, I would have even more credit.
RF don't know anything about those deductions until you send those forms in.
Right, and that's why you do have to file. See, that's why I disagree with Bianca, that I would not want the IRS sending me a bill. Because that puts the burden on me. In other words, I'm now guilty until I prove myself innocent. I think it's much better that we file our returns with our deductions.
The only time the IRS sends you a bill is when you owe something. Mm-hmm. You do your own taxes, and you take advantage of all these deductions, then that's the way that you get about it. I had employees that had zero taken out of their checks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done it myself. Bianca, what do you think?
Well, I think most people generally take the standard deduction, so it just comes back to my argument that it's better to let the government just send you a bill, and then if you want to contest it, you can. If you have extenuating circumstances, but if you're like most Americans and you just take the standard deduction, you don't have any weird expenses or not using any government loopholes like Amazon is, it just works out better for you because it's a very intimidating process for most people to do the tax return.
Well,
and the reason
I've been
to
since
to
I was
Reagan
16.
Was
I've done my own taxes for years. Yeah, he's read the instructions.
Well, we're not all equal, Greg. you're if you are a wonder kid,
it's not that hard to read the instructions.
Well, that's another.
And you can always hire somebody. I don't do my own plumbing. I hire people, but I can read the instructions on an IRS form. Yeah, go ahead, Bianchi.
That's another problem. People don't have sense like Greg does. You're dealing with a bunch of ignorant people in society that cause all these problems. And, you know, when people say everybody shouldn't vote, well, I'm kind of believing they shouldn't.
This is such an interesting show. I got a progressive from San Francisco. I got a black conservative, and I got me. This is a great day.
You're right. By the way, I'm black in saying that.
We would never know, Bianchi, unless you told us, so I really appreciate you filling us in. I'm teasing you. Bianchi calls almost every day. It's really great. It's kind of like my co-host. It's wonderful. All right. Listen, I want to do the Kennedy thing for a bit because we had Christina Bob on the show recently. Like you suggested off the air, it'd be great to get you two together, but she's almost impossible to get on the show. So like I say, twice in 6 months, I think I'm doing well. But one of the things we talked about was a Trump-Kennedy debate. I've talked to a friend of mine at Right Side Broadcasting, Jessica Rivera, who I think is a friend of yours, at least on Facebook. She's a reporter.
We don't talk that much, but yeah, she has a friend.
Okay. Right. But if you have some folks that you know that know Kennedy, this would be a great thing. And they may not do it. I mean, next week's the first debate, so they might not get it then. But if we can get them sometime soon, either right before or after Labor Day, to just sit down on a live discussion and just talk about the issues like grownups. It's gonna make all these other idiots look like idiots. I don't know if anybody's running on the Democrat side. They should. I don't know why no one's running against Brandon. Why is nobody running against Brandon? Let me ask you that.
They've got a stranglehold on the party. And let me tell you a personal example I have from this.
Okay.
When I was leading the recall with the other gentleman against Newsom, I secured 500,000 California Democrats to sign it. That was a third of the votes that we needed to get Newsom recalled.
Right.
And I, at the time, because it was COVID, it forced us all on a Zoom. So I was attending Democratic clubs from up and down the state, from Humboldt to San Diego. And Newsom had somebody in every club deliver the same message. Don't even think about getting into the race or you'll be Cruz Bustamante. And for those of you who don't know who Cruz Bustamante is, he was the lieutenant governor about 20 years ago, back when Greg Davis was recalled so they could get Arnold Schwarzenegger in. And Cruz figured he'd run as a safety bet, as a safety candidate, so to speak, but that just ended up causing more problems than it solved. And so he was never heard from again. And that's the idea is that, and that's what they do. And that's why they can't affect people like me and Trump, because we don't care. You know, I've got nothing to lose. I've got nowhere to go but up. And, you know, he's kind of the same way.
So do you have, like, your own branch of the party now? Or is there a progressive wing of the Democrats that's, you know, a decent progressive as opposed to the Marxist wing, the communist wing? So let's talk about the Democrat Party. Because
the Progressive Caucus is the biggest caucus.
Okay, tell me about it.
The Progressive Caucus is the biggest one in the Democratic Party. That's it. And we all get along great. We all think the same. So it's just, they're really the heart of the Democratic Party, what it used to be and what it should be now.
Well, see, now, how does it differ from liberals? So I think of, like, Pink, I'll get you in just a second. Like Robert Kennedy is a classic liberal Democrat, you know, ACLU, the way they used to be. You know, he's loves the country, believes in a strong defense, believes in a lot of the same things, just as a different way of doing it. His solutions are much more likely to be government programs. My solutions are more likely to be, like I said, you know, creating a good economic climate or creating the things that will allow for the same prosperity, but not directly, you know, taking from one to another or instituting a program that costs money. That's the biggest difference that we have, but we still want the same things. You know, money in people's pockets and a better system and more freedom. So how does someone like a Robert Kennedy, who is what I would call a classic liberal Democrat, compare to the Progressive Caucus?
Well, it's almost night and day.
Okay.
And what we have a term for them now, those kind of moderate Democrats, those dinos are traditionally called neoliberals, meaning kind of just whatever feels comfortable for them as long as they can make money and let other people go to hell, so to speak.
Yeah,
a lot of here in San Francisco.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm serious.
With the neocons, same
anything
thing.
Goes as long as you have money. You know, you can stick your dick wherever you want, no problem. And they're okay with that. But, you know, but you better have money to donate, and otherwise you're done. And I've seen it with some LGBT, you know, Democratic clubs, unfortunately, kind of turn their backs on progressive, and rather cheaply because of the net. All Pelosi gives them is like $1,500 a year or something like that. And that's how cheap, that's how easily they're bought off, unfortunately. They don't respect the fact that if it wasn't for the progressives in our political history, we would be nowhere right now. And that includes minorities, too. You know,
being who, the American people? Or?
Well, you know, like black people, Hispanic, whatever. When you turn your back on the progressive, you know, candidates and policies, you turn your back on your heritage and kind of disrespect the people who fought to get you where you are now. And,
yeah, I need to disagree, but I
want to
get Pianki's comment first. Pianki, what do you think of that?
You know, when you talk about this, that, and the other, when it comes down to group, what are the issues? You have to lay the issues on the table so they can be inspected. Group A, Group B, Group C. Democrats, Republicans, liberals, what are the issues? Who in the hell is this deep state? It seems like it's a cop-out for getting down to the nitty-gritty. And it's not only in politics, but it's another area where people talk the deep. Who is the deep state? Put some names, faces, emails, post office boxes to them. So we know who you're talking about.
Were you
about.
Listening earlier when I told you how to find them? Greg, you
say
want to pick up on that?
Oh, sure. No.
Well, I told you earlier how to find them.
You know, yeah, but here's the thing. I was told there was a Santa Claus. I sent letters to the North Pole and nothing came back.
Oh, no.
So
it's in the wrong place.
Yes,
those that come to me
Virginia,
me
there is
Santa
a deep
Claus,
state.
Yeah. All right,
people that came
to
me telling me that there was a Santa Claus, I stayed up till midnight, 1 o'clock, never seen him come down and chip. So produce them is all I ask.
Did you really think somebody was anyway?
You can't expect people who believe in contrails to go out doing research and looking for somebody who they can't get the door open.
Chemtrails is a whole other issue. We can talk about that. That's one of my more amusing things. All right, let's define this, the deep state. So Bianca's definition, it's actually very simple, is that anybody that's taking money from both sides, taking money from the left, from the right, from conservatives, from liberals, from Democrats, from Republicans, they're just taking money. The way I define the deep state is people that have no care for this country at all. All they care about is their power and status. So that would be the people that have raised our debt to $32 trillion and don't care. the people that have wars all over the place since, let's go back to Korea. You know, the first thing that happened after World War II was that the United Nations was formed and they split Korea in 1945 into a north and a south. And guess what? There's a war there, right? So then that went from 50 to 53. And what happened in 54? They split Vietnam into two countries, a north and a south. And guess what happened a few years later? There was a war there, you know, and then they didn't have to split Iraq. They already had a boogeyman, you know, and then Afghanistan. I don't know, still don't know why we went in Afghanistan. And Ukraine, well, that's like the Democrat, you know, deep state piggy bank. You know, so it's that's a money laundering operation, just like Haiti was for the Clinton Foundation. So the deep state is the organization, is the internal Washington society that is a self-perpetuating, basically dictatorship. So they operate outside of government, outside of the Constitution. They exercise power, but they don't have any accountability. So that to me is the deep state.
Yeah, but you still have to put some names to them. That's what black people do. Always talking about this damn day. Who in the hell is this day?
Okay, let's start at the top. You know, Obama.
Make a list.
Mitch McConnell.
You have them in your crossfire.
Chris
Ray. You have them in your crosshairs. You know whether to fire or not to fire.
Okay. Let's take every.
They need to have.
All right. Let's just. Okay. You ask a question. I can answer.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know,
no, that's true.
Like microbes or bacteria or viruses.
Well,
you
I'm a grandpa, but I'm here to tell you now, Santa Claus does not exist.
Oh, you've just ruined the audience. What about our kids who are listening? Oh, God, what are we going to do now? Great. Thanks, Bianchi.
Destroyed a generation. Kids are crying right now.
I don't think kids are listening
to
the show.
Adult programming.
Not that young. Although we do have a teenage reporter, which is fascinating because she's brilliant. So that's quite interesting also to have some of the younger folks. All right, what's the Progressive Caucus view of the deep state? How do you guys handle, you know, the Mitch McConnells, the McCarthys, you know, the what's his name, Schumers, the Pelosis? How do you handle these people that are, you know, handling the reins of power?
Well, the
secretly?
Pelosis, it's me,
right?
Yeah, and the thing is that. The day after the election, I sent her a little a framed picture, and it had that picture of the one in the press room where they showed her walking with wet hair during the COVID thing.
I think it's a video of that too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I had a picture of that, and I had a picture of her garage door being vandalized, and in the caption it said, "You may have had their votes, but I have their hearts."
That's a good slogan.
And
what's and Paul Pelosi?
So the thing is, what are we doing about it?
Finish
the thing
this.
Is, we have to worry about the deep state within our own party first.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, the Republicans have their problems with the deep state too, and I think that's something that we have. It's common ground for sure. But we have to get rid of the deep state politicians within our party
Who are some of the worst ones that are only in it for their own power? Hold on, Pianki. I want to ask that first. Who's the deep Democrats? Who are the worst?
Well,
Pelosi,
obviously Pelosi was the worst of them.
Right.
Yeah, Chuck Schumer definitely got his hand out.
Merrick Garland.
We're
Chris
kind of
Ray.
Watching Hakeem Jeffries right now.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, I've mostly been focused on Pelosi over the last 2 years.
Adam Schiff. Adam
Schiff is definitely a hack, and they were both up here during Pride too. Mm-hmm. They had this big banquet for them, the LGBT community, and what do Pelosi and Schiff have in common? They were both challenged by members of the LGBT community. Schiff was challenged by a drag queen from Echo Park or something
Lake. So this is fascinating. All right, so in California, let me get Pianchi's question first, then I'll get to mine. Pianchi, you had a question you want to ask?
Yeah, who is the we? You say we got to get rid of them. I don't live in California, so I don't get to, if we're talking about way of voting.
He's in Missouri.
Or beating them up. Well, in way of voting, I don't vote for them. I don't live in California. I know something's wrong with Akeem Jeffery because I know his uncle, Leonard, been knowing him for a long time.
Oh, that's interesting.
But who is this week?
I don't quite understand. When I'm saying we have to get rid of the deep state, I mean Americans have to get rid of them.
Well,
it's a And just because it's not happening in your backyard doesn't mean it won't come there soon enough, like a plague.
Well, you know, and not to be attacked, but when people say blacks, what is it that the progressives have given blacks? What have the progressives given me and my family? Because I hear the things that the people would, that I hear the things that Akeem Jeffrey talks about. I don't want that. So it's very disingenuous to be trying to lump all blacks in one big pile. It just does not exist, especially for some conversations. Then the next conversation is at a 90 degrees of what you presented before that. I hear people say. So what are the progressives do for me?
Well, there's certainly a kernel of concern to your argument, to be sure.
Well, it's actually bigger than a kernel of corn. But what have the if the progressives have gotten something to me that's as big as a walnut, then what is it?
Well, see, I understand why he's asking the question, because, you know, I think of Martin Luther King, he was more conservative. He talked about the American dream. He talked about the Declaration of Independence. I mean, I read the I Have a Dream speech every Martin Luther King day, you know, so fairly well-versed, not in everything he did, but as far as – and still some contention, but as far as I know, he was a registered Republican. And so the civil rights movement was not an exclusively progressive movement. It was really an American movement for freedom and equality that covered a lot of different areas and people. So I understand where Priyanki's question is coming from. Does that make sense?
Yes, including Johnson's Great Society.
You can have freedom, but you're not going to have equality across the board. It ain't going to happen.
You know, let me get to Priyanka and decide
another
question.
Money is a great
start. Yeah.
Money helps bring equality pretty quick. And that's what we're trying to go for.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's why I had a job, a profession, that I had fulfilled all my tax obligations by the middle of February. So equality is not going to help everybody across. It's just not going to happen. I mean, just really think about what people are saying when they say they want equality. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I'm going to hold you up just for a little bit, just in the interest of time, because I want to get a few more issues covered. And we don't get a chance to talk to a genuine progressive from the left coast all that often. Thus, I'd love to have you back on a regular basis, because this is the insights that you can provide that we just don't get are great. Now, you mentioned the LGBT community going after the Democrats. My thought was that there's only certain people that can say certain things. There are only certain things that black people can say in this country, particularly the N-word. There are certain things that liberals can say, certain things that conservatives can say. You know, it's fascinating. So the idea in California, a liberal progressive state where the Republicans have no voice, I mean, none, that the people that can go after the liberal progressives and not be called racist, sexist, homophobes is the LGBT community. So that to me is interesting.
Yeah.
So how does that work?
Yeah,
how the dynamics work in California? So tell me about it.
I'm sure a political science professor could explain it much better than I can, but
I'll give it a shot.
I'm not really interested in dissecting it. I'm more interested in utilizing it right now.
Okay. So how
because
does
it is an, it
that's
is
fascinating.
It is what you're saying is true. What you're saying is true, and that's the only way to do it. We're the only ones with credibility. You know, when Republicans do it, it's just like, oh, they're just being Republicans.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was the same thing a couple summers ago when I led a group of people to the White House. It was part of this larger demonstration of the Sunrise Movement. And
what's that?
We shut the entire thing down. Every gate. We were at every gate, shut the whole place down. We had dignitaries giving us the bird, and it even dominated the press briefing at the time. They were asking, I think it was Jen Psaki or something like. It's like, who are those people outside? Well, they're people who care about the environment. And it's like, wait a minute, don't the Democrats care about the environment? And aren't they Democrats? Aren't they liberals too? And yeah, but they don't really think we're doing a great job on it. and that became an eye opener to the world press, because we thought all Democrats were just hunky dory together, and you're seeing that there is some serious strife, and it's because the mainstream Democratic Party has gone away from its core values. So yeah, it has to come from within. To attack it, unfortunately, and again, like you said, we have different approaches to getting to the same place.
Yeah,
and people can to prefer what we're doing as opposed to what Republicans want. So
well, I think it depends on where you are.
Listen,
having lived in the Bay Area, now I'm in conservative Florida, in Milton, just outside Pensacola. Trust me, it's a different world. We might as well be on a different planet.
I get that
much of a contrast. Yeah, which is partially why I'm here, because I could not do this show in San Francisco. I'd be off the air and run out of town and the whole bit. And even though I'm not particularly partisan, I go after Republicans, Democrats. I go after all the parties. But like I say, I'm an anti-federalist, so people don't even know what that is. All right, what's the Sunrise Movement? That's the first I've heard of it, although you may have mentioned it before.
Oh, yeah, the Sunrise is a kind of like the Green New Deal's army, so to speak. They were endorsed by AOC, who actually sat in on a protest in another Congress person's office. AOC joined him and sat on the floor too, and that's really when they okay. picked up steam.
See, now there's somebody I'd love to talk to.
Yeah, I mean,
it should be fascinating to have on the show. And it's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Gaetz,
I mean,
my congressman, talks to AOC all the time. Apparently, they get along really well. So it's
that's the thing is that we have more in common than people want to believe.
Right.
And that's what they're trying to divide us on, these ridiculous mm-hmm. things like abortion or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, really, when you get down to it, the Freedom Caucus is about kind of core values, and so is the Progressive Caucus, about core values. And then you have the rest of these parties who are just about, kind of lining the deep state's pocket. And that's really the way it's shaken out. And that's why, I have a lot of respect for Chip Roy. And and I liked seeing them kind of rumble there on the House floor, during the speaker debate. That was great. I wish they'd do that again. I even sent messages to like some of these progressive caucus members. Mm-hmm. we should have their kind of fight in us. Those guys
That's
really
funny,
know how to
we,
fight.
We say the same thing that we say if we fought like Democrats, Trump would be in the White House. And so it's exactly that. That's really kind of funny. So what do Democrats, progressive Democrats, those that don't like the Democrat Party, think of Donald Trump? There's some support there, isn't there?
The results speak for themselves. People who couldn't vote for Bernie Sanders didn't necessarily vote for Clinton. Many of them actually voted for Donald Trump.
Interesting.
And that tells you all you need to know right there, is that, we're not about having these kind of D.C. insiders anymore. These nominations are just not to be bestowed upon, the people who put in their time or whatever they've done to get there.
Yeah,
whoever
it's my turn. That's deep state.
Yeah, there's
what?
No turns in this
my
stuff.
Turn.
There is,
why
there's
did they
no
vote
turns.
For
there's none of this BS.
Right.
So, unfortunately, they've been able to. Does somebody want to ask a question?
No, go ahead and finish. Then I'll get the questions. Basically, what you're talking about now, but so continue.
They seem to push this narrative as Trump is a racist, which they're really. I mean, I believe Trump is kind of a jackass, but that doesn't make him a racist or, any of these other, harsh things that they're saying. He could definitely benefit from the Barack Obama school of humility, to be sure. But, I think there is pretty evidence out there that does allow us to conclude that there is a definite force working against him. One thing that comes to mind is the Corona vaccine came out the day after the election. Come on. Come on.
That's interesting.
That was done to humiliate him.
Yeah.
And I can't think of how many hundreds of thousands or millions of people suffered or even died because of that kind of petty deep state, animus. I used to watch
itself.
The press briefings.
Go ahead, finish. This is a huge topic. You just opened up.
I used to watch the press briefings in his White House, and they would hardly let them talk. As a group, the press corps just decided to try to hijack the whole thing.
Right.
And they weren't really asking so much questions as making statements, and not allowing the press secretary. Press secretary to say her thing, I thought was a little unfair.
Yeah, I want to talk about that for a minute, but I want to get Pianki's question. He had one earlier. Pianki, you had a point you wanted to make?
Okay.
Well, I want to know why the progressives voted for Donald Trump.
It's a good question.
Well, like I said, they're not interested in these deep state insiders like Hillary Clinton. You know, we wanted Bernie Sanders. The majority of Democrats wanted Bernie Sanders. And the thing is, every poll, everyone showed the only person who could beat Donald Trump was Bernie Sanders. But they railroaded him anyway because they had their concerns about Trump, too. When I say they, I mean the deep state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if Bernie got in, Bernie would be just as much of a force as Trump would have been, but just in other ways. And that scared them. And we all knew
what
that.
What would you get out of Bernie Sanders' policy? No, I'm a black person. And I don't, but they hear these things all the time. It's a generalization of things. It never gets to specifics. What are the issues? That's really the reason
we
why I
can't talk about
Donald
the specifics. They're too involved. And a lot of people can't understand them, but what we're trying to say is that we're really trying to help. And we've committed ourselves to that process. I personally committed myself to that process.
Like I said earlier, 40% of Americans
can't afford a $500 setback. That is a very, very dark statistic. And it's only going to get worse because everybody knows the rich get richer and wealth is finite.
Okay, stop right there. 40% of Americans cannot withstand a $500 setback. So what is the conditions of those 40% that gravitates to the reason why they can't? What are they doing?
They're not doing anything wrong. That's the problem. It's these kind of billionaire deep state people who are sucking up all the money. We have 40,000 vacant units in San Francisco and 77 billionaires. We could easily tax them, pay for the people who are struggling to have a good place to live, and it wouldn't affect the middle or even upper class at all. But nobody wants to do that because it means
tax a billionaire more so than anybody else?
They've been more blessed, and they should pay more.
They've been more blessed,
and they should pay more.
Okay, I gotta hold you both up. Hold on.
We're not saying there shouldn't be like a rich class, but they're saying it's gone too far. You know, I don't know what somebody needs more than $100 million. What do you do with more than $100 million?
Well, as long as you obtain...
All right, I got to hold you up. I'm sorry, Pianki, but we're at the end of the hour here, and I got Tara on the line for our animal shelter update. So here's what I want to do. I think we're not going to sell this now, and that's fine. I understand that. I think that a lot of folks are not familiar with the progressive agenda like you're talking about. So what we can do is spend an hour on universal basic income and a couple of other things, and then Pianki can, you know, take those issues directly. What I wanted to accomplish today was the things we were talking about, the fact that, there are Democrats who don't want the deep state any more than Republicans want the deep state. Deep state being Hillary Clinton as opposed to Bernie Sanders, you know, who, like I say, I would not have voted for, but he got screwed. He got railroaded.
Yeah.
And so anybody that thinks that the 2020 election wasn't stolen, you know, the 2016 election was stolen from Bernie. And then it just kind of goes from there. I think the 2018 election was the Republicans lost the House, and that was stolen by converting about 7 seats in California. So there's a lot of things to talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, the things we have more in common, the idea that it's a deep state versus, you know, those of us of honest political beliefs, even though we are completely different sides of the political spectrum, we still want a better country, and we want people to have more money and have more prosperity and more freedom. We just have very different ways of getting at it. But we can talk about that. We can talk about our different ways, our different pathways to economic, social, and individual freedom. But what people don't know, and the reason I like having you on, is that there is a huge world of commonality that nobody else is thinking about. So why are there so many
Republicans? They're thinking about it. They're just not broadcasting it.
We are. So, but here's something too. The last question, then I'll get to Tara. First of all, thank you so much for coming on again. Is that a lot of Republicans support Robert Kennedy for the same reason Democrats support Donald Trump. He's not the deep state. He's honest. We may not agree with everything he says, but he's a man of integrity, and he wants the best for this country. I can deal with that. I'd much rather have somebody I disagree with who's honest than somebody who says all the right things that I know is lying through their teeth and is only interested in their own part. So let's just sum that up. What do you think of Republicans supporting Kennedy? And before we get you on again, do you think we could work on getting these two together, Trump and Kennedy, somehow? Progressive Caucus talks to the Trump campaign. The Freedom Caucus talks to the Kennedy campaign. Let's start talking.
Well, I think it's certainly very telling of how corrupt our media is, because they're pushing a different narrative. They're still trying to like divide us, and we're talking like this. We're talking in various social media groups, and we're connecting. And we're not going to be divided on the things that they want us to be divided on anymore.
And that alone is a good mission for us. Yeah, and that alone is worth having you on. Any contact information, websites, Facebook pages, anything you want to give, and then I'll get on to Tara, who's been very patiently waiting.
Oh yeah, just if you want to know more, just email us or go to www.biancaforsanfrancisco, all one continuous phrase, .org. And you'll find our link to our link tree where you can find all of our social media and all that stuff. And, we'd love to get people involved. We have over 400 people working around the world that are united remotely over platforms like Slack. So we can definitely, and many of them are working full time on researching and ending Pelosi. And they've done good work for us. We can definitely accommodate more people, and we'd love to get you on.
That would be a shock to conservative world that there's a Democrat organization working to get Pelosi out of office. That alone is news. Thank you, Bianca.
Yeah.
Bianca von Krieg. We'll do it again soon. And then you're welcome to stick around if you want. We're going to talk critters right now with Tara from the animal shelter. So thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. There we go. Let's get to bring on Tara. Bring Bianca back. And Tara, you just walked in on a huge discussion.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. But do you have any comments? This might be a chance because Bianca's still here. Questions about the progressive movement, progressive caucus, anything like that you've wondered about?
I needed to do a lot of research for myself. I know a lot of people tend to get turned off in politics in general because of the negativity. So hopefully maybe, like you said, if there's a way to bring people together, I think that's super important. And I think that would get people more involved if there's some hope. People tend to lose hope because it's so divided. So.
Not on this show. if you're a sincere person, if you're an honest person, if you have the courage of your convictions, you're welcome on my show, even if you completely disagree with me. Never an issue.
Yeah, I think it's great to hear healthy conversations between people of opposite interests and opposite beliefs, because I think it, people can do it in a civil and adult manner. It really can open people's eyes to the other side of things.
There we go. All right. Well said. Let's get to the critters. First of all, let's introduce you and where you represent and give the contact and all the other information, and then we'll see what's going on with the animals this week.
Yeah, so I'm Tara D, and I work for Santa Rosa County Animal Services. We are located at 4451 Pine Forest Road, and that's in Milton, Florida. Our phone number here is 850-983-4680. Our website address is santarosa.fl.gov/animals, and we do have a website page as well, and that's Santa Rosa County Animal Services. And or Facebook page rather. And basically, if you're looking for a pet you lost or to adopt, you can check out those avenues, or you can come see us Monday through Friday, 11:30 to 4:30. Wednesdays we are open late until 6:30, and Saturdays 10 till 3:30.
Yeah, how are the animals doing in the hot weather? Because we've had
hot here. Yeah, it's really probably one of the worst summers we've had in many years here at the shelter. We're getting dogs that are getting overheated, so we're trying to address those issues. We put out a plea on our wish list for cooling mats, and the public has been super gracious. We've gotten probably over half the amount of kennels that we have covered for a cooling mat. So those are little things we're doing, trying to get the animals, you know, more comfortable. We've got the big industrial fans, but, you know, that's just blowing hot air around. So our big staff has looked into getting some mobile AC units in here to try to at least get the temperature down. We're getting an ice machine back in here so we can keep them topped off with ice to keep the water cool, because literally the water in their bowls is getting warm because of the heat. So we're doing what we can to keep them as comfortable as we can in the environment. But, of course, the ideal thing would be to get them into foster or adoptive homes. So that's what we're working on now, and we appreciate the community supporting us with our request when we need something.
Yeah. And for my other folks who are still here, Bianchi and Bianca, it's hard to say those two names. You have only two people to have on the show, right? Feel free to mute yourselves, you know, when you're not talking. That way you can, you know, do background noise. But if you want to, you know, join us back in with a question or something, please feel free. How do people recognize when their animals are getting too hot? Because they don't sweat, you know.
Right.
So they don't sweat,
but the main thing is just heavy panting, or if a dog looks kind of disoriented, he's not really paying attention to you, and they can get overheated just like us. You know, the worst thing you can ever do is leave them in a car. That will kill them in a matter of minutes. So we just stress that, and it's something that people repeat with the children, with the kids. You know, don't leave somebody in a car unattended in a hot car. Same thing with the pets. They have a fur coat. They can't take that off, so they're going to get hot super fast, and it just takes a few minutes. We actually are just working hard to try to keep the dogs who are not in cars from overheating, just because it's an extreme summer. And so, you know, if your dog is at home, make sure that they have plenty of shade and water if they're outside. If they're an indoor-outdoor dog, monitor the time that they spend outside. If they're outside running laps, like, don't let them continue to do that if you see they're getting overheated. You have to – they're kind of like kids. They don't really know what's best for them sometimes.
Okay.
You have to be the adult and be like, okay, time to come in, buddy, and get them cooled off. But heavy panting is the main thing. And then if the dog is, like, disoriented or disinterested, whereas normally they're very attentive, those are things to keep an eye on. And just make sure that they have plenty of fresh water and, you know, just keep an eye on them, because the summer is brutal this year.
Should people walk the dogs at night? I just thought of that.
I mean, if they can, that would be ideal, because another thing that they have to worry about, too, is walking them on the hot concrete. They can burn their paw pads. So
that's what I was thinking,
If you're able to walk them early in the morning or late in the evening, that's going to be better. But some people's schedules don't allow that. So if you are walking them midday, please just, you know, make sure they have access to water. Keep an eye on their paw pads. You know, if you're walking them on the concrete, you really need to do it for just a brief period of time, because they can, you know, they can get burns on their paw pads, and then it's going to be painful for them to walk. So just, you know, monitor them closely during this heat. And, yeah, but evening walks would be much better if that's an alternative, if that's something you can do with your schedule.
Okay. How are the cats doing?
Cats are doing okay here because they are in the AC, so they are the lucky guys here at the moment. They kind of,
so
you know,
discriminate,
smaller.
Okay? So like the
well,
dogs,
you know,
class citizens, and I'm teasing you.
Yeah, so they're the prima donnas here at the shelter. They get the luxury of being in AC at all times, in the heat at all times, whereas the dogs during the summer, it's definitely harder for them. Now, in the wintertime, what little winter we have here in Florida, when it does get super cold, we close up our guillotine doors so the dogs stay in the inside area. We have the blowers that are the heated blowers, and then the floors have the boilers, the little pipes underneath that have it heats the floor. So it's not as good as being in a home, obviously, but it's a lot more comfortable to be here in the wintertime and be a little chilly, you know, than being in the summertime for the dogs. But, yeah, so winter isn't too bad. It's mainly the summer that's worse for the animals, for sure.
Yeah, one more question before we get to our list of highlights for this week. Bigger dogs, are they at more risk for heat than smaller ones by chance, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters necessarily, but we tend to see more issues with the bigger dogs because I think that's just because we have a lot more bigger dogs here. But if a little dog is not used to being outdoors and they're outside, it's definitely an issue with dogs that are used to certain things. You know, if they've always been an outdoor dog, it's not that they wouldn't get overheated, but they're just more acclimated. But if you have a dog that's not used to being outside and you stick him outside for an hour, he definitely is more likely. Also, the short snout breeds like the English Bulldogs, the Frenchies, these guys have a different a different track, so they're going to overheat a lot more quickly. So you definitely have to watch those guys. They don't.
Well,
really
they don't have a nose.
Well, yeah,
a big pointy
basically.
Nose like a
basically,
poodle.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Is this some physics
well,
thing or what? Now
they,
you got to be curious.
The brachio breeds, they already have issues with breathing, so they tend to overheat a lot more easy. So when it's hot out, they are definitely at a higher risk of getting overheated more quickly. So we would just say don't even have those guys outside except to potty or if you're walking in the evenings. But definitely those are guys to keep a close eye on when the heat hits.
That's kind of funny. Are there any dogs that are particularly good in hot weather? And the only thing that comes to mind is Rhodesian Ridgeback because Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, gets pretty hot. The dogs that are outside that are bred for, or dogs that were like bred in India, or someplace that's hot.
Our hunting
do really
dogs
well?
Tend to do better here than some of the other
like
breeds.
Bloodhounds?
And then labs. We see a lot of walker hounds, treeing hounds, and things like that. Coon hounds.
Okay.
They tend to be pretty hardy and are used to kind of being outdoors. Not to say they can't overheat because any dog could overheat, but I think they're more used to being an outdoor dog. And so as a whole, we don't see as many issues. Plus, they're a little leaner, and maybe that helps too. Labs tend to do pretty well because they like to get in the water. So I think they have if they're in an area where there's water, like they'll just go jump in the water. And we see that with our dogs here when we take them out. The labs will jump directly into our little kiddie pools and like they're like, we're no dummies. We're going to cool off and have some fun with the water. Whereas some other breeds are like, ew, water. And then they tend to stay hotter. But as a whole, pretty much just keep an eye on every dog that's going to be outside with this heat because even if they're used to it, the temperatures are brutal. And I think even a dog that normally wouldn't get overheated could possibly get overheated this summer. So we just ask everybody to keep an eye out. But, some of the shorter-haired dogs that are more geared to be athletic sometimes do a lot better in the heat than
greyhounds.
Some of the foo-foo dogs. We don't even see greyhounds anymore, which is a good thing. But
Has that been banned, or is that still legal to raise greyhounds?
They close down the tracks, we don't see them, and which is good because they used to be, it used to be a lot of greyhounds were being euthanized simply when they couldn't run anymore or weren't making money for their owners. So since that's not a money-making thing for them now, they're not being bred, at least not here, and so we don't see that problem. So, which is good because there were great greyhound rescues, but the numbers of dogs were staggering that were coming from that money-making thing. So now they're not being bred for that here, so we don't see them very often, which is a good thing.
They'd be a good watchdog or a good guard dog because they're really fast, I would think. But
They're very fast, but they're big babies. They're chickens. They're kind of afraid of their own shadows as a whole. So.
Really?
Yeah, they're big babies. But, I mean, they're super sweet dogs and great temperaments and fun, but I don't know that they would be great watchdogs as a whole. So.
Okay. We'll have to do our breed of the week. These kind of things are interesting. Like the fact that the greyhounds, because we've all heard about them and seen them, but the fact that they're not breeding them as much because they don't have the tracks, that's good news.
Very good news, for sure.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about this week? I've been sort of
We have some fun things coming up, so we wanted to kind of mention those. This Saturday, we're going to be at PetSmart over in Pace, and we'll be there 11 to 2. We've got some puppies that just came in, so we're going to have those cutie patooties at the PetSmart with us. So we're hoping they'll get adopted quickly and do not have to return to the shelter. That's the goal. Adoption fee is only $25, and that's covering vaccinations that are done, spay and neuter, microchip, the whole shebang, so it's a good deal. And so we'll be there from 11 till 2. And then we also have the Friends of Santa Rosa Shelter group that are going to be coming by, I think, about 3, and they're going to be giving out pup cups to our pups here at the shelter. So I think they're doing a fundraiser for that online. So that'll be going on. And then also they're going to do a training class for people. And now this is something you have to sign up ahead of time for. But they will be doing that training class this month here, which is actually this Saturday at the shelter. And so we encourage people to keep an eye on the Friends of Santa Rosa Animal Shelter page because they do a monthly class for the community, and it's free. And they try to tackle different subjects that are problems. Like I think this one is about dog reactive dogs, how to safely be out and about with them where they're not going to, you know, put you in danger, put another pet in danger. So they've always got a good class, and it's free. They just offer it to the community, but because of that, space is limited, so you do have to sign up ahead of time. So we're excited for that for the public. And then next week we're going to be, next week we're going to be at Petco, and then we also have a waived adoption fee event on the 25th and 26th here at the shelter, and that'll be for that Friday and Saturday. So we'll probably talk about that next week as well. But then also something we just started this week, we have an auction online. So the Friends of Santa Rosa Shelter is kind of running with this auction. So we've got some great items that were donated, and the bidding starts today at 12 and it concludes next Friday at 8 p.m. So people can go to that page and you can bid on some of the items, and, you know, highest bidder wins the prize at next Friday at 8 p.m. So we've got some beautiful wreaths on there. We've got a lot of animal merch on there. We've got some actual non-animal items like KitchenAid blender, Ninja blender. We've got a pool, a water filtration.
Ninja blender?
So, yes.
I think it's feedback coming from me, actually. I don't know if you've got if the phone's near or where the computer where you're listening or something like that. I think I hear it sometimes when I'm talking. That's okay.
Oh, sorry. I'm in a different office today because the front was pretty busy up there, so it could be because of that.
Oh, okay. And my favorite person who got caught in the video, she's still there?
Miss Vicky, yeah, she is off today, but she is, she is still here and doing her thing, and we will have to definitely get her involved soon.
Mm-hmm. Now, because we're actually international, we're heard in anywhere from 30 to 50 countries, depending on the day, and we're over the United States. Most of our artists, about 85% U.S., 15% international. Do you work with other animal shelters, different states? Is there like a cooperative organization? You know, because you guys are doing such a good job, especially being a non-euthanizing, you know, animal shelter now, which is a huge change. And we need to talk about
that.
We should at least mention that every week, because when people think of, think of an animal shelter, the first they think of is the pound, you know, and your dog's there for 72 hours and they're gone. You know, and that's not just the case anymore, but there are places that still do that. So how are animal shelters, are you guys cooperating? Or do you have interstate, you know, organizations? How do you guys talk to each other?
Yeah, so there are different different groups online, and there are different main organizations like Best Friends, Animal Welfare Society, the Humane Society, things like that, where they try to have people collaborate with each other. And we are always trying to find new partners. Obviously, for us, we don't intake animals from other areas because we are so full here in our community. But there are places primarily up north that will intake animals. So we're always looking for new partners that we can work with. Right now, we send a lot of our cats to PetSmart here locally, and then we try to work with rescues as they come up that are able to receive dogs. Generally, it's like a breed-specific thing, but when we have an emergency, we were able to send dogs out to all different places. We had a hoarding case about a year and a half ago, and they were able to basically connect us with groups from everywhere, so we're able to send dogs all over the place. So, you know, as emergencies arise, shelters do step up and try to help each other. We are unfortunately stay pretty full, so we don't get to intake a lot of animals to help other people, but we do what we can when we can. So
I was thinking more policies, more ideas, more management strategies, you know, more stuff,
and
getting more places to not be euthanizing shelters, but to be, you know, I guess the expression
no-kill.
What's the right way to say it?
So, so what that means basically, the no-kill doesn't mean nothing is euthanized. Excuse me, but it just basically means that it's not done for space or just to clear the shelter. It's done only if medically necessary or if it's a behavior issue. Like, you don't want to put an unsafe dog out in the community that's bit three people and that is going to bite again and maybe potentially harm a child. And so those decisions, you know, based on that, made for those reasons, are understandable. But just euthanizing because you have 50 dogs coming in that day and you only have 40 kennels, it's a horrible decision to make, and that's not something that people are on board with anymore, which is great. So now, basically, we're euthanizing not for space, but for, you know, if it's a medical treatment, medical issue that can't be treated. But we treat for pretty much anything. So it's something extreme, or if the behavior is a danger to someone, animal, or maybe people, you know, then that's something that's considered, but it's not done just for space anymore. And so Best Friends Animal Society has basically kind of been the spearhead of that, and they've gone to shelters all over the country using their money and their education opportunities to help each shelter kind of get on a different track. And that's kind of how we got we got going with it. They came in, they provided us training, they brought in a person to actually help us embed for a year to kind of get us on a different path and try new programs, and all of those things caught on, and shelter staff was all about it because we don't want to euthanize, you know, and the public were very supportive, and our government was completely supportive as well. So they literally put their money where their mouth was and supported us getting a vet on staff and things like that. So that's kind of how we changed the mindset in the area. The main thing now is just continuing that and looking for support from the community, because if we don't have a space to take in a dog, we may have to say, hey, we got to wait to take this dog in. So it can be difficult because people are used to that instant, hey, take this dog, I don't want it anymore. And so things are different there, and we want to make sure animals are safe, but we also don't want to euthanize just because we're full. So that's what we're still working on, how to still make sure we help everybody that needs help when we don't have space.
Okay. So who's up on the hit parade this week? Who have we got? Who are our featured stars?
Yeah, so for today, we just sent a lot of cats to get spayed and neutered. So for kitties, I haven't got to go up there this morning to see who the kitties are, but we've got some cute kitties up there, I know, as of yesterday. So I would encourage anyone to just come by and see who we have. But so I'll kind of talk about a couple dogs. So we have a dog named Diesel, and Diesel he's a Newfie mix, so he's this big fluff ball, but he's a big guy, probably 100 pounds or so, and he's a mix, so he's not as big as they normally would be, but he actually came from, the owner had given him away, kind of got tossed around, so he's now here at the shelter. He went into foster for a couple days. They found he likes to kind of be the boss and guard everything, so probably would be better suited as an only pet, but he's not like awful with other animals, but just probably in the home, probably would want to be the only guy, and that could be just probably from the situation he came from, you know, being kind of tossed around a bit. But he's a sweetheart. He's a big, fluffy guy, and he is just very affectionate, loving, loves belly rubs, and he's just a sweet
piece.
Are
huge.
And
what did you mix with it? St. Bernard
or something?
He's so
adorable. We don't know what he's mixed with, but it toned down the size a bit, so he's maybe 100 pounds as opposed to, say, 130 or 150. So if you like the Newfie look but you didn't want something quite so big, he might be perfect. And his name is Diesel, and he is just a sweetheart. Now, in his kennel, he might give you the side eye. Once you take him out, he's just a love bug. Box nicely on a leash, especially considering how big he is. He's very well-mannered. I think he can sit already. And so, yeah, I would encourage people to look him up on our Facebook page or our website and look at his picture. He is adorable, and he's just one of our favorites. And then also, we do have some seniors, so we do have our senior special for the rest of August. If anybody adopts one of our senior dogs, the adoption fee is waived. And we have, I think, about 8 senior dogs, and they are posted on our Facebook page on a special entry there. But if you come in and you're looking for a senior and you adopt them, the fees will be waived, and that's through the end of August.
So the senior dog obviously is not going to be around as long as a puppy. So
this
would be good for people
benefits.
Who like older dogs, or what's the advantage?
So for me, I love older dogs. So the advantage, there are some negatives. Yeah, they're not going to be around as long as a young puppy, but also you don't have to train them. They pretty much kind of know how to do everything, and we can't guarantee they're all house trained, but the majority of the older dogs that go home we find are house trained. So they're not going to be chewing up stuff, ideally. Now, there's always the exception, so we have to throw out that disclaimer. But for the most part, the older dogs are generally going to be easier to walk because they appreciate a good walk. They're not going to be so pulling so hard because they're like, walks are nice. They're not going to be tearing up your house. They're just happy, and they're just more laid back. And so it's a good option for a lot of people, and I love older dogs, so just to me, that's the way to go. But, you know, we know everybody has their favorite, but we really would tell everybody, consider an older dog, especially if you don't want to deal with the puppy, you know, the puppy just tearing up your house, having to go potty every 2 hours. Older dogs don't have to do all that. So, yeah, consider an older dog.
Interesting. Yeah, probably a good first dog, too, for people to kind of get used to dogs.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean,
Okay.
They really are beneficial with, and, you know, if you're not sure, you can always foster an older dog and see if it's your vibe. And if it's not, then, you know, hey, you gave them a break from the shelter for a couple weeks, so that's something positive as well.
Well, pets end up looking like you anyway. So if you're a senior and you get a senior dog, you're all gonna have gray hair together. You'd be just fine, you know. I saw a guy with tufted white hair and a mushed up, squished up face. The guy was probably in the 70s or 80s, and he had a British bulldog in the front seat with him. I mean, it was hysterical. they
kind of appropriate.
They looked exactly like, yeah. I see walking a dog. If you have a young, healthy dog, and I've often thought of this, is it a bad practice or dangerous in any way to have to walk a dog when you're on a bicycle, for example? So they get to run at a decent speed, and you don't have to. You're not always hauling the dog back and yanking on their leash and stretching the neck and all those other nasty things that collies, mm-hmm. you know, seem to do. So is there a way to walk other than a dog park? You know, how can you walk a dog that can run for 5 miles?
Well, some of the suggestions with that are sometimes if you put a pack on them, that gives them kind of an extra chore because they're going to be like, what's this on my back? And it kind of gives them some extra mental stimulation,
handicap.
Which kind of tires them out a little bit. And, you know, put your stuff in there, put your own water and snacks in there and, like, let them help you, right? But and some people can do the whole bike with a dog thing. Like, that would be terrible for me because I would probably crash and the dog would drag me, so... Yeah, they had to be super, you know, super agile and very coordinated, that. So I don't, you know, for most of us, that's probably going to be a disaster. So, but, you know, just exercising your dog, you know, taking them for walks. And if they're an active dog, you know, tiring them out helps you, too, when you're in the house because they're going to be better behaved. So, you know, a lot of people who have labs like the Nerf guns, they'll shoot the balls and stuff. And those are, you know, they go and chase those tennis balls and just, back and forth. But if it tires the dog out, it's going to make them better behaved in the home. So exercise is super, super important, even though sometimes it can be a little annoying because your dog has more energy than you, but the more you exercise them and get them good and calm, the better they're going to be in the home for you. So we always, you know, if somebody calls us like, hey, I got this dog, you know, and he's being so destructive in the house. Well, do you walk him? Well, no, I let him out in the yard. No, that's not going to cut it. You've got to give them some specific activity to wear them out. Letting them out in the yard is great, but a lot of times they just stand there when really they need to be running, and so you don't have to get interactive with them to get them going, but it'll help the whole family if the dog is properly exercised. So we encourage that strongly. Make sure your dog is exercised, even, you know, not just putting them in the yard, but you engage with them to get them running, and that helps everybody in the home.
Well, I see these beautiful young dogs. They're healthy. They want to run, and the owners are like either not necessarily older, but they're just walking. They're walking at, you know, human pace. And dogs have four legs. They can bound, you know, 15 feet, whatever it is, in a jump. You know, so it's a totally different animal. And this is what I was thinking, especially if there's a place, like I ride the Blackwater Trail on bikes a lot. I see a bunch of people walking dogs on it. Every once in a while, I see someone with a bicycle, or they have, like, the dog pulling a wagon with the kids in the back. That always struck me as amazing, too. But I'm just thinking it seems to make more sense, especially if you can – I don't know if they can go off-leash there, but if you have a dog well enough trained that you can go off-leash and ride with a bicycle on a trail that's guarded like that, it seems to me a reasonably safe thing to do unless other dogs come, but that could be a problem anyway, you know, so.
That's the thing you have to worry about, other dogs. So I'm not sure what the rules are there. I know if it's a leash law area, you're supposed to have your dog on leash, but there are the long leads. I think they're 25-foot leads. So if you have a dog that's really well behaved, you can get a super long lead. That way you still technically have him on lead, but he's got a lot more room to go with that. I know you can take him to the dog parks and you can run around there, but you do have to obviously be aware that other dogs may, with their version of well-behaved, it may not be the same as what your dog's version is. So
just
kind of keep that in mind.
The school, the bullies, you know, all the other stuff there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. Do we have other dogs we should be talking about of our hit parade for this week?
Oh, yeah. So I talked about Diesel. We talked about the puppies that are coming up for adoption. They came in, and so we're going to have those guys at PetSmart tomorrow. So there's 5, I think, and if they don't get adopted today, they'll all 5 be there at PetSmart, and they're like probably going to be medium-sized dogs. Let's see who the other special dog was that we wanted to talk about. 1, 2, 3. I'm kind of thinking in my head. Okay, so we have Easter. Easter is a bully mix, a senior, very high energy. Well, it's not necessarily a pit bull. Something
like
of the bulldog breed. Yeah. So pit bull, it could be some sort of bully, because pit bull is just such a catch-all, and it's like we don't know exactly
what the
dog ID
is.
So some bulldog in there, but it could be American. It can be pity. We don't know. It's just a mix of whatever. And technically, the dog is probably a mixed breed of 100 million things if we did DNA. So, but she's an older girl, but very energetic and loves to walk. She gets so crazy, like, you know, ready to go out of the kennel. So it's hard to leash her up because she's so excited to get out of the kennel. Even in the heat, she just wants to go outside and run around. And once she gets that out of her system, then she's actually so easy to bring back in comparison. But she's a senior girl. We've got some really nice pictures of her online, so we'd encourage people to check her out. And she's one of the dogs that's on our waived fee features. And she's just a nice dog. So if you want an older dog that's not going to really tear up your house, but you still like her a hiker or something, she'd probably be a good fit for you, because she still has a lot of boundless energy, even though she's older. But she's
I'm older. I have boundless energy.
Exactly.
I started a career at 57, you know, so,
just because we have senior dogs, they still have a lot of life left in them. So I don't
want
people to think that if the dog's got to stay on the couch and be pampered, although they might enjoy that. But we have lots of dogs of various activity levels for every different person. And I do want to mention one more dog that is – he's not a
we
bad
got the whole
dog,
hour today,
but...
so we can
okay.
Hang
so we
up a bit.
Yeah, we can always fill it up with more dogs. So we have a dog named Dill Pickle. And so this fella
what?
So his original name, so he has a little bit of a story. So he was here originally. His name is Billy Joel, and he was here for a while, didn't get adopted, so we at the time we had a partnership
so
with
he renamed
Man
it Dill Pickle.
Society. Well, they did, because when they go to a different environment, sometimes they like to start with a new name. So Pittsburgh Humane Society changed his name to Dill Pickle, and when they kind of shut down, he came back to us, and Dill Pickle just was kind of cute, so we left the name. And so he's up for adoption. He's been here for a while now, for a few months. He doesn't do well with doesn't play well with others, so that's his problem, so he's going to have to be the only pet. But he is... he actually does great when he's been on doggy day outs, and he's been super well behaved. When our volunteers take him out, I don't know if you're familiar with these big, I don't know what they're called. Generally, they're for horses. There's like these big, like blue, it's like a blue hand thing, and the horse will knock it around. Well, somebody brought him one of those, and he just loves it. So that is his favorite toy, and he will just knock that thing around the yard
for hours.
I have
no idea what
you're
talking about. Yeah.
So it's basically like a, and it, I don't know if they have it, it's a, it's a big, giant ball, and the one he has here is blue. And it's really hard.
Like a horse
very
hard
surface.
Or something?
It's something to do. The horses play with them, so I don't know what they're called,
really?
And I feel dumb for not knowing it. Yeah, but so we,
where's
they're really
Candace
big
when
and
her?
Tough. And yeah, okay. So, but they're really this big, they're huge, and then, like, you put them out there, and the tough dogs that just, like, tear stuff up really can't tear this thing up. So he loves it, and he will push that thing around in the yard and just play with it for like ever, as long as he's out there. And he's just adorable, and he's just a, you know, he's a plain Jane dog. He's black with white markings. He's a handsome guy, but just
looks like
gets
a Holstein.
No interest here. He's just, he gets passed over here at the shelter. So even though, you know, yeah, he's going to have to be the only pet, but he will bring someone so much just enjoyment.
No,
he's
get,
very
make a video.
And,
put a video on
we'll
Facebook with playing with this blue ball thing. Maybe that's not the way to say it, but you know what I'm talking about. Anyway.
But he's a hoot. I mean, he's a fun dog, and I think somebody would have a great pet if they just gave him a chance. But, you know, it can be limiting. Some of our guys and girls can't be with other pets, so it can be tough to find that right home, because a lot of people who are looking for pets already have a pet. So that's one of the things we do run into. But also, sometimes in the shelter, they do terrible here, and we find out later that they're doing well with another pet. But we always just, we're transparent with what we know here.
So we always
are very transparent, like, hey, look, when we check this dog out with other dogs here, he did terrible, or, hey, this dog did wonderful.
We
just give that disclaimer so they know.
I think you need to take lessons from the dating sites, you know, have videos. Hi, my name is Dill Pickle. You know, my turn-ons are sunsets, walks on the beach, and big blue, you know, beach balls. She's that as the model, right? Okay, so you just imagine this now. And just, you have a nice narrator. And now I'd like to present Dill Pickle, our dog of the week. you secure a match, you know, if you like, you know, dogs playing with large objects, you know, I mean do it like say seriously, like a dating site. I mean, I think it'd be hysterical. First of all, I'd love to see those on my Facebook page. That's the first thing. Second thing, you should put them on your page. But yeah, well, that would be great. Because you know, that would be a conversation starter. He's like,
that's a great idea.
You
know,
or you have the world's greatest lap dog. And here we have the world's greatest lap dog. Notice the gentle way the dog sits, the Yorkie sits gently on the left knee of the owner. You know, I mean, you can have fun with this.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we have some animals with some fantastic personalities. So, and a lot of times you just don't know until you get to spend some one-on-one time with them. You know, you'll see a dog and you're like, oh, he's cute or whatever. And then the girls are in, I say girls because we don't have any males in our kennel staff. So I'm not being, you know, sexist or anything. We only have females that are in the kennel.
Well,
they're taking dogs out.
Except for you. All the women there look the same. Remember we had like three blonde women that I kept mistaking for the same person? That was hysterical.
Yes, we do have a lot of blondes here. So, you know, but like we have a lot of ladies that work here, and we're, you know, we encourage men
Why
to apply for jobs as well.
How come?
I think if I were to guess, it would be the caretaker thing. I think that women with a caretaker vibe, and you know, it's not to say that we don't have males in the animal welfare industry, but it's
a
lot less.
Your manager's a dude.
Yeah, we have some animal control officers that are males. So we have a few males that work here, but primarily it's women. And, you know, we always say we could use more male staff because it helps the animals because they're catered to and taken care of by all women here. So sometimes when a man comes in to try to adopt a dog, if the dog has had a bad experience, say, before he got here with men, he's going to be like, oh, men are bad. But if we have staff that are male that they have positive experiences with while they're here, then it helps. So, okay, guys aren't so bad. So if they get adopted, and they're not going to be scared of the man. So we do see that fairly often, or you'll see a man with a hat come through and the dogs react. And so it's just, you kind of wonder, okay, they had a bad experience. So we try to make sure, you know, our staff members that are males will try to go the extra mile to try to, you know, hey, it's okay. So you'll see our officers running through, giving out treats throughout the afternoons when they make it back in. And then, you know, and that way the dogs have a positive experience with other people besides just the blue scrubs. So.
Yeah. It's, I was thinking like elementary schools have mostly women teachers, you know, and of course the boys need role models. Does that make a difference in that if you have only women working with the dogs and they go to a male owner, is there a dynamic that, is it more of an adjustment for the animals?
I mean, I think they can adjust fine once they get there, but I think their initial reaction sometimes may be a little more fearful if they're not used to that. But I think as a whole, once they get into a home environment, if that's a good owner, then they're gonna adjust fine. Now, if they had years of an issue, say if they came from like an abusive environment, same as with people, and you know all they saw was this big scary man who beat them all the time, then they may be more fearful as a whole. But if it's just
a dog,
it's just they're used to us and they go to a home environment, basically our dogs are like, hey, as long as you take care of me and treat me well, I don't care who you are, I don't care what you look like, it's all good.
Yeah, especially when all the women look the same, then the dogs don't care. It's like, oh, yeah, it's you again.
Well, if you feed them, give them attention, I don't think they really care. You can have purple hair, you can be tall, short, whatever. They don't care.
They don't care, yeah. Bianca, you want to join the conversation?
Yeah, maybe Congress could give a stipend, maybe $1,000 a month for every citizen that adopts a pet.
You want to write a bill on that? Tara, what do you think?
We always joke about that if you could claim your dogs on your taxes animal people spend a lot of money on their pets. Now you have the opposite where people don't do what they're supposed to at all, but the people who care for them are generally spending a lot of money on their pets. So, yeah, it would be awesome if there was some sort of credit you could get for that. I think it might make people better pet owners, but I'm sure it's not high on the list.
When I found out that, I forgot who the manager's name again, but I had to drag it out of him, that your budget's like $1 million a year. And that's public information. It's not like I'm saying anything out of turn here. That's a lot of money. And I don't think people realize how much it costs to take care of the animals in a county. So if the county could offer or the state could offer, I don't think federal, because this sounds like a county or a state or a city thing, could offer a deduction a pet adoption deduction, you know, so that you get your animals moved out faster to homes, you know, especially for people that are low income but would be great owners, but they just can't afford the expense of a pet. You know,
right.
I'm sure there's lots of people, you know, this is not a bad idea. I mean, Bianchi might have been joking when he said it. I don't know. I'll ask him. He's still here. I'll ask him in a second. But I don't think that's something, you know, you guys would actually, that'd be a good chance for you to start writing legislation. Think about it. Some kind of deduction bill, like a $500 tax deduction or, you know, or for something or credit. Probably a credit is better because the money's direct.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the cost of the adoption plus any of the vet bills, food for, I don't know, a year, you know, just work out what it would cost, you know, for the average dog, and then propose that as a deduction, you know, because that way, because that's money that you guys don't have to spend, and the owner's going to take over that expense after that anyway, at least we hope so.
Right.
It might encourage for adoptions for really good owners who just don't have money, because pets are expensive, like you said.
Yes,
it's not
they
a bad
definitely
idea.
Are. Yeah, okay. That is a good idea.
Okay, write it down.
Make it while we at it, we can write a bill. We can write a bill that go for kids too, because you got kids that stay in orphan homes their entire childhood until they're adults.
Well, how does that work? I don't know how adoptions work. We've never done a show on adoptions. We should. It just hasn't really come up, but it's not a bad idea. You know, again, but I don't want people just making money off this. Like, the foster care system is notorious for having really horrible parents that just like the check. So the kids are abused. They end up being trafficked. And really bad things happen to kids that are in foster care. And there's some great foster parents, too. So obviously we can't generalize. But there's some – and I wouldn't want to see pet people doing it just for the deduction
just
either.
The
so
same,
we gotta,
yeah, you probably want to make
to,
it minimal to where it's helpful, but it's not going to be like a huge – It's going to help, but it's not going to be like a reason to
And it should be a one-time thing or once every 5 years or something like that so that you can't make money off it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. One of the reasons that we do have our adoption fee so low is for that reason. So we kind of look at it like, okay, do we want this dog to sit here and wait and wait and wait, or do we want to try to facilitate quicker adoption? So our fees are super low. They don't come close to covering the medical that we do while they're here. But that helps the owner, hopefully, instead of investing, you know, a high amount to adopt them. It's just a super cheap amount. They pay that, and then whatever they are going to spend on the dog or cat, they can use that to establish themselves as a vet, get flea prevention, heartworm prevention, and get them further along, because those things can be expensive. So that's why we try to do the testing while they're here, get everything knocked out, and the adoption fee is super low. That way, when they take them home, it's like, hey, all this is already done. You're good for a whole year on their vaccinations, so hopefully then you know, okay, next year I'm going to need to spend a couple $100 to get them current. Let me go ahead and put a little bit aside every month so it's not this huge daunting task, and then you're ready for it when it comes. And then, of course, accidents and sickness and things like that happen, but, you know, actually they have pet insurance now too, which is pretty reasonable. So you can get your pet insured, same for like, so if they say, I think, it starts out pretty – the younger the animal is, the cheaper it is. But say, for example, $20 a month for your dog, and then if he twisting his leg or something, you go to the vet and they reimburse you for those costs. If your dog, like, had to have surgery or something, you're just paying a co-pay fee or a deductible or something like that, and then the insurance would cover the rest of it. So it can be helpful. If you know, are in a position to do that. Some people have multiple dogs. That's not really something they can do. But a lot of people have had good results with that. So that way, if something happens later, the dog gets sick, and you're going to normally would spend $2,000 or $3,000, then that insurance kicks in, and then it's, you know, manageable. You just pay the deductible.
Yeah, we just heard Bianca in the previous hour was talking about this. She said $500. I've heard as low as $400 that most Americans can't handle a $400 emergency. Everybody's stretched so thin right now because of the economy.
Exactly.
So yeah, $2,000 in pet expense, that's pretty major.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's one of the things. Another thing is like spay and neuter, the cost has gone up so dramatically. So it varies, but it can be from $300 up to like $1,000, depending on where you go. I personally don't have $1,000 to go do that myself. Like, I have money in savings for an emergency, but that would prohibit me from adopting a pet. So That's why, you know, it's just really important to have options out there. So when we adopt something else, already spayed and neutered, that way that's a cost people don't have to incur. And, yeah, like $500, yeah, every month, if something you know, you budget your money, you budget, mm-hmm. you put a little in savings, but I don't know, like, it's really tough right now for people. So, you know, even for people who are pet owners who are good pet owners, if something happens and that animal goes to the vet and it's something, anything, you know, they twisted their leg, it's got to have x-rays. Yeah, they're not getting out of there under $400 or $500, and that's a major expense.
Yeah, if they have kids, it gets even more complicated.
Exactly. Imagine if you had a kid that went to the doctor and he had to have medication, and then your dog got hurt. It's like those things, yeah, definitely add up.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it would work the same way. Something I thought of is, you know, just like we have school choice, we should have health, you know, choice. So, mm-hmm. you know, the money that would go to all the taxes and the health departments and things like that goes to people, and you get a credit. You know, either you get a direct, you know, same thing. Well, like the education taxes would go to people so they could choose the mm-hmm. school. I don't know how you do it with health. It'd be a little different. But you could just make health expenses be credits. And so that up to, you know, and you could even do it by income. After a certain point, you can afford Rush Limbaugh could afford,
all
the medical
bills. Yeah.
He didn't health insurance, yeah. For most folks, you know, there's no reason. And you could even extend it to pets. And, you know, pets are mm-hmm. part of the family, you know, for people. I mean, they really take care of their pets. And so it'd be interesting to do, especially as many pets as out there. Do you remember the husky thing we talked about where the guys were selling them out of the back of their car? Did you ever hear further on that?
I never heard back from our officers. I will follow up on that for you. Yeah,
okay,
I did not hear back, and I forgot to follow up with her to find out what they found out. So I will follow up on that.
Okay, to let folks know what happened, I was working on a Sunday, and I drove by these two guys that were selling. They had a sign, excuse me, and they were selling young husky puppies right out of the back of their SUV. And I thought at first it was part of a Petco thing because they were you know, not really in front of, but you know, in line with a Petco. And then I thought, wait a minute, they're too far away from it. They'd be up there under the doorway, and they were right by the access road. And so they had a blue SUV, and they had a bunch of huskies in cages, little puppies. They were young. They weren't really walking much yet. And they were literally holding them in car windows as people were driving by. And I said, A, this is disgusting. B, this can't be legal. C, why isn't the county sheriff here? So I called the county sheriff. And then I called you. You know, mm-hmm. we connected a little bit later. But there had to be some kind of report because I called it in, gave my name and everything. So first of all, if someone sees something like that, that can't be legal. What's the story?
Yeah, so absolutely, if you see something like that, feel free to call it in. So with puppies, if they are being sold, they have to be at least 8 weeks old, and they are legally supposed to have a health certificate, which you have to obtain at your vet's office. And that's one way that you can immediately, if you're looking to purchase a puppy, you know, or adopt or whatever, if they're selling them out of a vehicle, chances are, like you said, it's 99% going to be, like, we can pretty much say with most certainty that they're not being cared for properly. They don't have health certificates, because otherwise they're going to be doing it in a more professional manner. So, you know, no health certificate, that means they've probably never been vetted. They probably not had any vaccinations, more than likely. And they may not even be old enough to legally be sold. So the reason that health certificate is a requirement by law is to protect you as a new pet owner, that this animal has, yes, been seen by the vet. The vet did not see anything concerning, no contagious diseases on these animals that he's aware of. They go through and they check everything off. And so that's why it's important to have that if you're purchasing. If you are going to purchase a pet, that's something really to look at. And I'm not saying that all breeders are bad or anything, but that type of breeder is a backyard breeder. They're just looking to flip puppies to make money. And if you're purchasing that puppy, even though it's cute and you see it and you want to help it, you're just helping them to put money in their pocket. So just think about that. You know, they prey on people's emotions a lot of times. Like, oh, look at this cute puppy.
Oh, yeah, right here. Buy this puppy right now. And, of course, the kid's in the back seat going, I want a puppy.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. But getting a puppy should not be, you know, of course it's going to be an emotional experience, but you want to have a set plan.
Should
you
should be a spontaneous
family.
Emotional experience.
Yeah, you should make sure that it's something you think about and you're ready for, and definitely don't get them from a backyard breeder if you can help it, because
this
you don't
know
the history
breeder.
Of the animal.
Yeah. This is the, you know, but
yes,
my first thought,
that's a whole
honestly,
other thing. So, but yeah,
yeah
definitely they should have, legally, they should have a health certificate. So chances are they probably didn't have those at all. So if you would have purchased one of those puppies, it's a luck of the draw if they've even had any vaccinations at all, if they're old enough. Mm-hmm. And pulling puppies away from their parents before a certain age is not good for their socialization and
right.
things like that. So, and for, but they need their mom's milk.
They'll have
to
trust
great,
issues like we all do.
Exactly.
Well,
if you pull
thinking.
A puppy away at five
yeah.
weeks old, they don't know.
Yep.
The mom is teaching them how to behave. They're
right.
socializing with the other puppies. So it's a terrible thing to do. So, yeah, definitely a no-go. If you see that, call it in.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. My thought was, quite honestly, when I saw there were two Hispanic gentlemen, was that they're part of Brandon's illegals. And I don't know if that's been a problem yet, but we do know that illegals are flooding the country to the tune of 15 plus million. And
wow.
that means they're going to everybody's town. Everybody's going to have a share. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're all going to take part in this. And I don't know what the practices are in other countries as far as selling pets. This might be a common thing to do in Honduras. I have no idea. I know it's not something you hear. It's, like I say, it struck me as wrong. But
well,
are you noticing?
It actually is kind of common, but in a bad way. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. So that's my next question, is if we can enforce this now, we want to discourage this kind of stuff because we don't want people coming, you know, walking across the border into our country who have no concept of what it means to live here, suddenly doing things like selling, you know, husky puppies out of the back of an SUV. That's just wrong.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't think it's a matter of maybe people doing it in a different country because we see it all the time, and these are people who are probably three
okay,
generations
so not,
period.
Right.
So I don't think it's
yeah.
it's specific to that. But like you said, maybe these people, if they come in and they don't know, no, they need to be educated. This is not something that's legal here, so don't do this.
Yeah.
That might, like you said, it could be something that's done on the regular there, but it's done mm-hmm. here illegally also all the time. So
really?
That's just something
yeah.
we want to educate everybody, like, hey, this is not good for you as a pet owner, because you don't know what you're getting, and they've had no vet care. So if you are going to buy from a breeder,
mm-hmm.
we're not saying don't ever buy from a breeder. That's a personal decision. But
right.
we always encourage people to check with shelters first. There's so many animals that don't have homes. If you
mm-hmm.
want a specific breed, there are rescues. Check with the rescues.
Yeah, I got the rescues.
Yeah, the purebred rescues all over the place. And huskies.
Do they call
husky
you?
Husky rescues.
Do they say, hey, you got a husky? We need a husky today.
If we have one,
we need a corgi.
Generally, sometimes
we'll
see it on
corgi.
Our website,
anyway,
and they'll be like,
hey,
you have a husky. You know, we have a spot for it. So, yeah, we will work with the rescues if we can,
okay.
if we have a breed that comes in. The reason why is because they can be more specific about who adopts it, whereas
right.
we are more have open adoptions. So, but,
yeah.
yeah, and they do have puppies even at the husky rescue. They have puppies all the time. So that's. So I would encourage people, you know, if you're just looking for a specific dog, you can still find them in a shelter or rescue, even if it's a purebred. So the whole, oh, we have to go to a breeder because it's a purebred now, you can find them other places too. So we just encourage people to check out shelters first, rescues.
Get the mutts.
And if you, yeah, and mutts are awesome. But if you
mutts
are
cool.
set on a certain breed,
I'm a
do
mutt.
Your research, make sure that breeder is legit and doing what they're supposed to do so that you have an animal that's healthy.
Yeah, I just think if we had like haggling over different breeds, like, what do you got? You got a husky? I got a corgi. You got the corgi or the husky? Well, the guys, I'm good for the last one. Okay, what else do you got? Don't mind me. So
we've had a
we
little bit
a
of everything here
rabbi.
At the shelter. So.
We need a rabbi on the show too. That'd be another good thing to get. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left, and then Brianna Latipo is going to join us. Now, if you got time, you're welcome to stick around. Pianchi too. I want to talk to her myself for a while, but this is going to be a fascinating interview. So we got just a few minutes. It looks like I'll be playing all my commercials at the end of the show today, which is fine. It's Friday. I don't care. But she's going to be a very interesting guest. She's the wife of Dr. Joseph Latipo, who's our Surgeon General here in Florida. And
oh,
she's an author and very interesting person. So, yeah, hang around. You never know who's going to show up here. I mean, this is a very special Friday. That's why I started the show late today, so I could get her on because she's busy.
Oh,
and,
yeah, exciting. That sounds like a very interesting interesting topic for sure.
Well, my first hour is interesting, too. Bianca von Krieg has been on before, too. She's a progressive socialist from San Francisco
mm-hmm.
on a wildly conservative, actually far more than conservative radio talk show. And
uh-huh.
we have a lot of things to discuss. You know, and the fact that we do have so many things, we have common goals, but completely
mm-hmm.
different ways of getting there. You know, so and that's why I like having her on. So it's quite interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Any other things we've got? What else is happening at the shelter I think we've gotten pretty much everything.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. He's trying to keep everybody cool until we can get over this brutal summer and hopefully just slide into the fall with a little bit of relief for the animals, and maybe people will be more inclined to come in. And because, you know, some people don't want to get out in this heat if they don't have to, which I don't blame them. It's pretty tiring, and it makes you tired. You just want to get inside into the AC. So we're just trying to get through. And then we've got some great adoption events coming up in the fall, too. Yeah. So once we get through the summer, I think it'll be a little more enjoyable for everybody, especially the pets. Yep.
Walk your dog at sunrise or sunset.
That's right. You know? Start early in the morning, and you'll feel good because you exercised. And,
well,
and then maybe after dinner.
Sometimes we'll go bike ride at sunrise. And it's the best time. Nobody's around.
And it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
And it can be
about 15 minutes before sunrise. Yeah. So look at your look at your clock. So sunrise is now. Let's get the time here real quick. It is, when's the sun rising today? The days are getting shorter, by the way, which is good. Well, I don't have to have tomorrow. So tomorrow's sunrise is, that's sunset, 7:27 night. Sunrise is 6:17.
Okay, I was going to say
it's actually about, we've lost half an hour. It used to be 5:45 is when the sun got up. So
yeah, I'm noticing when, because I leave the house, it's starting to be a little darker because I leave the house at like 5:45 a.m.
Yeah,
so to get to work, and it's like you can tell it's like, oh, it's starting to get a little darker. Just
walk your dog at 6, be at work by 8. You can do it.
Yeah, there you go. You've exercised. You've knocked that out for the day. Your dog feels good, and everybody's happy.
You feel good. Everybody's happy. Exactly. Let's get your contact information one more time. And if Brianna calls, I'll go right to her call. If not, I'll play something that I have supposed to play hours ago.
Okay. So Santa Rosa Animal Services, we're at 4451 Pine Forest Road, Milton, Florida. Phone number is 850-983-4680, or you can go to our website, santarosa.fl.gov/animals, or come on by directly and visit us, and we'll be at PetSmart tomorrow, 11 till 2.
Sounds good. All right, let me play some stuff, and we'll be back with Brianna Latipo in just a little bit. Like I say, you're welcome to hang on the line or call in or whatever you want to do. Thank you, Tara, for coming later this week. I appreciate it. We'll be back
to Absolutely, no problem.
Week.
All right, thanks for having us.
Now. In that case, I'm not going to play anything. I'm going to go right to my guest. So let me get my guest presentation up here. All right. So so thank you, Tara. Here we go. So our guest of the day. All right. Take care. Our guest of the day is Brianna Latipo. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Let me get you the official bio here. Brianna Latipo is an intuitive spiritual healer, movement therapist, and teacher. She's a master's degree in English from Harvard University and has studied traditional naturopathy, plant and herbal medicine, and shamanism. She lives in Florida with her husband and three boys, where she works with nonprofit organizations to heal trafficked and exploited children. And I actually finished on time with the music this time. That was pretty good. Brianna, welcome to the show.
Hi, Greg. Thank you. Hey. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, let's get you a round of applause. Whoop, try it again. Hit the button, Greg. There we go. This has been a crazy day already, and so it's been lots of fun. We had my progressive socialist friend, who's an actor from the Left Coast. We just did an hour of animal shelter stuff because we had the time, and so now we have you, and I'm really glad to get you on because we've been taking, two or three months to get you on the show? It's been a while.
Yes, I know. It's been a little bit crazy lately, but I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, we have some interesting things in common. First of all, our crazy childhoods, which we'll get to, but also your book from Skyhorse Publishing. Tony Lyons was on, your publisher. We had Christina Bob, who has a book on from Skyhorse Publishing. We've got my big goal is to get a debate with Alan Dershowitz, who also has a book on Skyhorse Publishing. I'm hoping to write my next book, you know, for Skyhorse Publishing. So it's like, we're all a big happy family. We're all, this is like the most interesting publisher out there that is doing all the things that nobody else wants to do because, they want to prove your commercial worth. I mean, you know, Simon Schuster, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, they're not going to pick my book out or some of these other folks. So how'd you end up there? And then we'll talk about everything. No particular order today. So, and feel free to bring up stuff on your own. I don't want to... Skyhorse, tell me about him. What do you think?
Thank you. So, that I have to call it divine intervention. So my husband had written his book. I'm not sure if you've read it. It's called Transcending Fear. And he talks in that book a lot about our relationship and our journey and how us doing a lot of work to transmute our own trauma really informed him ending up in the position of Surgeon General. And through those conversations, I actually got to meet Tony Lyons.
Okay.
And first, I just want to stop and say for a moment that you already know that he's wonderful. You've had him on the show.
Oh, yeah,
we
had a blast.
I really admire so much what he's doing, and sometimes I don't think even he realizes the great importance of his courage. He's really giving a voice to those who would be voiceless under the mainstream administration or whatever you'd like to call it. And,
well, censorship of new ideas. You know, if you have a new idea, if you do something different, I had to find a little publisher in my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction, which I'm hoping for a massive renaissance as the world of aviation is about to explode. There's some really great things happening in aviation, which will open it up to a bunch of folks. So you have to start taking flying lessons. We'll talk about that, too. But I used to teach flying.
Great.
And so I'm hoping that
really?
He'll be. Oh, yeah. I've got a weird background. It's all over the place. I always wanted to fly airplanes. So I'll be back doing that. Once the show takes off, I'm buying my jet, and I'm going to hang upside down over Pensacola Beach and just go really fast. That's how I'm going to be spending my off time. But someone like Tony.
Stop by St. Pete and pick us up. I want to go.
I'll do that. Yeah, I'll give you a jet lesson.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be funny. We'll take turns. I'll probably have a two-seater, so you and Joseph will have to take your turns, and then you can compare notes about your jet lessons. That would be fun. It makes a lot of sense for you to fly. And I'll tell you why. My topics, the reason I haven't read any of your books is because I'm so ADHD, I can't get past the first page. My mind has already gone 15 different topics before I even get through the third paragraph. So I have a really tough time reading. This is why I talk to people. So you can tell me your book, but I can't read it because I'll be asleep by page three. I just, it's nothing to do with your book. It's just me. I have the attention span of a man.
No worries.
Yeah. But here's what's interesting, though.
I used to devour six or seven books a week, but
how do you do that?
Mother,
how?
I have.
Oh.
You know,
God,
I would put them away like food. I love words, and
really?
I feel like I'm not even reading. I'm just absorbing the words and the energy and the meaning and the intention. And it was always such a beautiful experience for me. And then I had children. I lost all ability to focus on anything.
Well, that is a multitasking
operation.
I love you got
my
three boys, right? Yeah, and they're
three boys.
Yep.
Can
you tell me their
goodness.
Ages?
Yeah.
Is that legal?
Sure.
Is that right here?
Yeah,
all right.
We have a freshly minted 10-year-old as of last week, and
okay.
then I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old who's going on 60 and likes to lecture adults on their morality. It's hysterical.
Oh, he's a smart one. Yeah, it's weird when the baby of the family, the 4-year-old's a smart one. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. But that's interesting. But that'll keep you busy. All of a sudden, you know, someone I believe as focused as you are. And I think we both share a lot of the empath qualities, just a guess, because that's the only way you can grow up in a totally dysfunctional environment. There's only two ways to go. You become dysfunctional yourself and take it out on the next generation, as my folks did, or you become a total empath, reject everything, and totally change how you treat your own kids, which is what you did.
Absolutely.
And I did. Yeah.
Absolutely.
What do you think of that?
I have come, I have a different opinion now than I did when I was young. When I was growing up, in fact, this is the first paragraph of my book. I was quite convinced that somebody had read their tea leaves wrong, and I was on the wrong planet in the wrong family, and that just
I'm just laughing because I agree with you. I was in the wrong century. You know, I should have been a musketeer.
Yeah.
I was definitely in the wrong place.
Well.
Yeah, a place of honor and
so
chivalry and decency, and yeah, but no, it didn't exist. Didn't work that way. Yeah.
No, and that's really tough, especially for a naturally empathic child.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you can relate very strongly to all of
this.
Oh,
yeah.
I used to lay outside under the stars, and especially after I saw E.T., I would pray for somebody to come pick me up, because I was sure they had left me behind accidentally.
Oh,
please
no.
Please come get me.
E.T.
But,
impressions for fun. No, I understand that. Listen, I'd look at cloud shapes and, you know, just imagine flying with them. And that's why I always liked aviation. I feel very much at home above the ground. You know, this is a crazy world down here. It doesn't make any sense to me. Airplanes make sense. You know, you pull the stick back, the nose goes up. You push the stick forward, the nose goes down. It's a very, very intuitive world, which is what I was getting into with empath. If you're an empath, I think empaths make some of the best pilots because you don't just follow the procedures. You bond with the airplane. You know, it's almost like a spiritual experience. And if you drive a sports car, it's the same kind of thing. Tell me, what do you think?
I was just
going to
tell
have
you,
I struck
I've
a nerve?
Have I never flown a plane? Huh? Yes.
Okay.
Well, when,
but now you
when
want
I was
to,
in
right?
my early 20s,
now you
I
want
do.
To.
I'd be up
all
there
right.
in a heartbeat.
Okay, go for it.
When I was in my early 20s, and I had a business, and the first big thing I ever bought myself, or really the only big thing, is I really wanted a sports car. And I went to the dealership, and I was proud of myself because it was I had finally gotten away from my family. I had started to break the mold, and I had really accomplished something.
Right.
And I wanted to buy myself something, and I had never driven a stick shift before, but I'd always wanted to learn. And I told the guy at the dealership, if he told me how to drive the car, if he taught me right there, I'd buy it. And so he did, and I did. And the bond I had with this car, it was a little BMW Z4 back when they were new.
Right.
And I had never had an experience like this where I felt like this machine and I were one entity. And it was a spiritual experience to drive this car. I never looked at the controls. I just felt it. And at that time, I was still thinking everybody had this experience. And I was chatting to a friend about it one day, and she looked at me like I had three heads.
You said the alien with three heads,
yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I know, and I know exactly what you're talking about. I had a 1977 Celica when I moved to California from Boston, and that was my spiritual soulmate. You know, it was a 5-speed.
Wow.
You know, I can still smell the interior. I know exactly what it looked like. In fact, I'm going to go find another one. I'm going to recreate the cars of my impetuous youth, which would be a 1970 Dodge Coronet and a 77 Celica. Coronet was my college car, which I painted shark's teeth on, like the Flying Tigers, which made it look really fierce. But this beautiful chocolate brown Celica with the louvers in the back, it was 5-speed. And in San Francisco, all the roads are curvy, right? So you couldn't do all the hills, but the East Bay Hills had these wonderful winding curvy roads that I would just blast down just for fun. You know, so and I was one with it. I never looked at the tach. I knew when to change the gears. It was completely intuitive, and I never really thought about this. Well, I have, but not in terms of empathy, not in terms of relating to a machine. In other words, it's nuts and bolts until you hop in. So we use these machines as extensions of ourselves, and if you have an empathic nature, that you understand other things as they understand themselves. You know, this is why when people they talk about flying a Spitfire, for example, you don't hop into a Spitfire, you strap it on, you become a part of it, you mold with it. It's so tight in there that the stick and the rudder and the throttles, you know, just become an extension of you. The wings are like an extension of you, and this is a whole I think it'd be an interesting philosophy for us to kind of develop here a little bit, but it's true. And this is a way, I think, for folks like you and me who are, you know, like I say, you either become a product of your environment or you totally change it. And once you, I wrote something down here I think you might find interesting. I said, once you've been down to the dark cave where the psychopaths live, walked among them and had them try to kill you or who you are, and walked out of the cave never to return, there really isn't a whole lot to be afraid of anymore.
Amen.
Does that make sense?
Isn't that the truth? 100%.
Yeah.
And in my adulthood, as I've worked on transmuting that trauma that had me afraid as a child, I've actually become very grateful for that experience. And Joe and I talk about this a lot. And we feel like without that trial by fire, that very immersive internship, if you will, we might have responded to the pandemic and, you know, other such things the way most people did. But like you said, when you've already been through it, there's really nothing left to be afraid of. And I think a serious lack of moral courage is what got us all into this in the first place.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about COVID. I was one of the pioneers of this is a bunch of nonsense. You know, on every show I post I post the CDC chart. Well, I'll tell you, let me give you the quick synopsis and then we'll get into, we'll start back at our beginnings here. But it was February 25th when Dr. Peter Pry, one of my favorite guests of all time and a very good friend of mine, he died of a COVID shot. I'm absolutely convinced. A year ago, August. So it'd be a year he's been gone now. But he got us Bill Gertz from the Washington Times, the national policy, foreign policy correspondent of anywhere. He's like the best. So he comes on our show for half an hour, February 25th of 2020. He tells us all about the Wuhan lab. So we already knew about the Wuhan lab. So when these guys were talking about 3 years later, it's like, we reported that 3 years ago. Where y'all been? So I took that. 2 days later, I wrote a bill. Because this is, and I'll talk to you more about this maybe off the air, but we are the world's only radio show with a citizen legislature. We actually write bills many times directly on the air. We have a bill for vaccine product liability, one that ends big tech censorship, and the big one for the federal folks is a bill that eliminates the power of Congress to borrow money. We're talking some serious stuff here. Oh, yeah. It's great. You're going to love this. A whole new world's about to open up. And I want to talk to both you and Joseph about, especially our vaccine bill, because if we can do it in Florida, we can do some amazing things. Excuse me. Anyway, so February 25th, we had Bill Gertz. February 27th, I wrote a bill for Congress saying they could only spend half their money on vaccines, because I already knew Dr. Fascist was evil. I've been calling him Dr. Fascist for about 3 years now. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. All right. So we have new names. So his full name, I haven't given his full name for a while. His full name is the, I can't remember how to do this. What do I call it? Psychopathic. No, I'll have to think of it because I like this whole string of adjectives for anyways. We'll call him Dr. Fascist. So February 27th, I write a bill saying Congress can only spend half their money on this vaccine nonsense. The other half has to be spent on early treatments. Well, it never went anywhere. Of course, Matt Gaetz is my congressman, right? You would think he would, you know, put it out there and do something with it. Nah, never heard back, right? And so March 2nd, so then I started doing some search stuff. I knew the vaccine stuff was wrong because you don't create a vaccine in 9 months. You just don't. Even the 15-year ones have issues, right? So I'm thinking, and why would you create a vaccine for a virus that's already here? You want to kill the virus. You want to treat it. You want to cure it. So I hop online. Right, and this is like February 28th, something like that. And I put three words into my search engine, what kills viruses? All of a sudden, all this stuff came up. Viruses can kill viruses. Drugs can kill viruses. Viruses and drugs can kill viruses. Drugs can highlight where viruses can attack other viruses. You know, viruses can highlight drugs to, you know, I learned all this stuff in 3 hours. I said, this is ridiculous. We can cure this, you know, anytime we want. We don't need a vaccine a year from now. That's crazy. So I knew the treatment was there. I knew everything Fauci was saying was a fraud. And this is March 2nd of 2020. So I broadcast it, right? Well, guess what happened to the numbers for the show within 24 hours?
What?
Well, we got totally tanked. It was gone. You know, we went from thousands of views on Facebook. They used to post the views when I post a show. We'd have like 8,000 to 10,000 views. And that was back when the show was terrible. It was like 2 hours. You know, I was working a full-time job. We still had like, you know, 10,000 views. Per show. And it went to like 5 the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. Guess what? They found me real fast. So I was, you know, persona non grata, as far as that goes right away. Anyway, I said, it didn't stop me. You know me, I'm like you. We don't care. We just keep going. Truth is more important than, yeah. than anything. Right. So I broadcasted this, this is a total fraud. The government, the virus is real, but everything around it, everything the government was doing was completely nonsense, you know? And so all the masks and all the closures, and I used to call him, you know, Dictator DeSantis. And I wrote an open letter on how he cannot violate the Constitution and did a big video right in the middle of the 15 days to slow the spread. And now I post a graph on every show. You'll see it on your show that shows that the CDC said COVID death rate went to about zero in July of 2020. Well, if it went to zero in 2020, in July, why did you bring out a so-called, you know, vaccine, which is a gene shot, in November? It was already 6 months late. The problem's gone. You know, anyway, so that's my story.
Well, I love that you were one of the early voices.
Yeah.
We had a similar experience becoming persona non grata.
Oh, do tell, please. Let's share.
So Joe and I were living in L.A., and we had been there a few years. We'd moved there from New York and Boston, and at the time, I was mostly busy having babies, but was still working. I was working with Stanford at the time, and Joe was at UCLA.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, up until then, we had been well-liked, well-regarded, what have you. And so then when the pandemic started, it just, you know, clearly nothing made sense, right? I feel like for any person with a remote connection to source or Earth or whatever you want to call it.
It didn't make sense. Yeah, that's the thing.
No, none of it. In fact, I remember we had our boys and we were sitting outside on Santa Monica Boulevard at one of the last restaurants that had refused to shut down. And the lockdowns hadn't become not permanent. They hadn't become, it's not law. I'm going to say this wrong, but
mandatory,
they hadn't taken
yeah.
over the city yet. Yes,
right.
Thank you.
they were never legal, but that's, we'll talk about that later.
Right.
Time. But yeah. So tell me what happened. Yeah.
So we're sitting out on the street and it is a ghost town. And this is a part of LA that has long been regarded as a cultural hub. It's, you know, it's
I've heard the Sheryl Crow song.
Brimming with activity.
Down Santa
what?
Monica Boulevard. Yeah, I know the song.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so she was spot on basically until COVID. And so I think it was March because it was right before the official announcement of lockdowns in Los Angeles. And Joe and the boys and I were outside. It was a gorgeous day. We were eating. and we were the only people on the street. And we're looking around and thinking, this isn't really going to happen, right? Like, people aren't actually going to confine themselves to their
they
homes
can't
and try
be
to
that
hide
stupid.
From an airborne virus, are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm still holding on to hope, right, that I haven't completely and entirely misjudged humanity. But lo and behold, the very next day, they shut down everything.
Yeah.
And we kept waiting for people to protest. I mean, aside from us, to stand up and say, wait a minute, no, you can't do this. This is not legal.
Yeah.
This is not moral. It's not ethical. It's not even smart. And
well, it's unconstitutional.
It didn't happen.
That was my argument, is that
yeah.
the Constitution's always enforced. We're still talking about that. That's why I want Dershowitz on. I want to talk to him about this, too. But
yeah.
you
I mean,
guys are you're professional health people. So let's get both your backgrounds. What's Joseph's medical before he became Surgeon General? What's your background in health? Because you obviously know more about this than the average person.
Boy, I don't even know if that's true anymore, but let's hope so.
I think so.
Classically trained. He has an MD and a PhD from Harvard. So MD from Harvard Med and then a PhD from the Kennedy School. I think it's now the Chan School of Government. And then my route was different. I have a master's from Harvard, but have nothing to do with health. My health education was pursued separately, mostly after I became extremely ill and almost died at the hands of Western medicine and realized that at least for me, that was not the answer. And that if I wanted to live, I was going to have to walk away from the system and take full responsibility for my own health and wellness. And then
you
want to
talk about that a
bit? A naturopathic. Sure.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
It's a long story, but the short version is.
I'll have you back. You can back on the show if you want. I love talking to you. This is great.
Thank
yeah.
you. So I have had very severe migraines all my life. Sorry.
You there? Oh, where'd she go? She'll probably call us right back, hopefully. Yeah, this happens. So it was in the middle of a great story, too. What am I going to do? I'll play a quick thing here in my book, and I'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Yeah, I haven't played any of my commercials today. We've been so busy with all the chats, but I didn't know how long you'd be gone, so I figured I'd sneak one in. Welcome back. Everything okay?
Sorry. I guess.
That's all right.
Oh, yeah. I think the powers that be didn't want us talking about this. They shut that right down.
Well, let me welcome the members of the FBI KGB that are listening to our show, as they usually do. Feel free to call, like everybody else does, 215-383-3832. And if you plan on raiding my house, at least give me some notice so I can make coffee and we can sit down like civilized people. There we go. It's my daily PSA for the FBI KGB. Back to you, Brianna. This is not your average talk show, as you figured out, right? There's no filter.
No, I know. I like it already.
Yeah, we do have fun. So if you can't say it here, you probably can't say it. It's pretty simple.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I have had migraines my whole life, and I'll jump back to that one later when we talk more about the book that has a lot to do with the healing journey I went on. But essentially, when we lived in Boston and decided to have children, I had to go off the migraine medication that I had been on basically lifelong.
Right.
Yes. And things very quickly took a serious nosedive. My health, it just became really scary. I actually did manage to get pregnant, but then I spent the next 18 months on and off in the hospital. And nobody could ever actually figure out what was wrong with me. I was in unbelievable pain basically 24 hours a day. I could not eat or drink. I was on an IV nearly the whole time.
Was this all migraine or pain all over? Was it beyond migraine pain, which is crippling from what I understand? I've never had one.
Oh, yes. Yes. So that's certainly how it was presenting. Now, on the other side of it, now looking back, I would say it was serious unresolved trauma manifesting that way.
Okay.
But at the time, yeah, I was in so much pain. I literally begged the doctor to cut my head off and give me a new one. I was out of my mind, but also quite serious about this at the time.
It probably made sense
that
under the pain you're under, you know, that's, you know, it sounds crazy unless you're hurting that badly, in which case, you know, anything makes sense to get relief will work. Yeah. So I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a dark time.
Yep.
Luckily my baby was perfectly healthy. Thank goodness. But I was a mess.
Well, that's good.
And even after he was born, you know, I just kept getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And all they would, and by they, I mean Western medicine, they had compiled a team of doctors, every kind of specialist you can imagine, you know, OB, pain specialist, neurologist, everything, physiatrist, psychiatrist. Nobody could figure out where this pain was coming from. And all they ever did was prescribe more and more medication. They'd put me on a drug, and then I'd have side effects, so they'd put me on a drug to mitigate those side effects, but then those drugs would have side effects. And before I knew it, I was so dissociated and such a shadow of myself, like ghost in the shell, that I realized I barely cared what happened to my life. And that's not me. I'm very
tired. Oh, I understand that feeling.
So much.
I was depressed for a couple of years. I know exactly. I describe it as walking neck deep in molasses. You just don't care.
Yes.
You don't want to hurt yourself.
You're
you don't
so
want to do
nuts.
Anything. But you literally, it's like the ultimate apathy. You just don't care about anything. Nothing matters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
but you still have to walk your life
and
do things. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I was doing this while having a new baby, and my poor husband, amazing, wonderful man that he is having to take
mm-hmm.
care of me and our new baby. And one day, I just had an epiphany. I was in so much pain. I was in the hospital. It was Christmas Day, and they wanted to give me more drugs. And finally, something inside me just said, "You know what? This is going to kill you. You're going to die if you stay on this path." And I realized, I don't want to live like this. I don't know what the answer is, but I know for me, it is not Western medicine. And that day, I walked away from all of it. I stopped taking all the medications. I walked away from my doctors, and I started to educate myself. So I went very deep into naturopathic medicine and herbalism and holistic medicine and a bit into shamanism and just everything I could get my hands on because I wanted to be responsible for my experience. And
we're going to give you another round of applause for this. So here we go. Nice job.
Thank you.
Yeah, for having the courage to do
really
what you believed in. That's the biggest thing. You have the courage to do what you believed in. You believed in yourself, and you have the courage to act on it. 99% of the population can't do that, and we're going to see if we can help them at some point. I got some ideas, but yeah. But that's what it takes.
Well, that's exactly what my book is about, is looking inside and listening to your intuition or whatever you want to call
Tell me.
But that truly is why I wrote the book, because boy, if I hadn't learned to listen to myself, I would be dead right now, no question. And it might have happened long before I got sick. Should I give a little synopsis?
Sure. Let's talk about the book.
Okay. So I grew up in a family that was deeply religious and very much at war with each other. So my mom's side was very fundamentalist Protestant, and my dad's side very fundamentalist Catholic, to the point that both sides thought everyone on earth other than their congregations was going to hell.
Right.
And that was, yeah.
And they
so
thought each
I'm
other was
going
to go to hell too? Your mother thought your father was going to hell,
yeah,
and your father thought your mother was going to hell?
Mm,
great.
And you know, from the moment I was born, I had relatives flipping me different versions of the Bible, and literally
you're getting a little quiet.
My sister and I to take us to their church or their Bible study and get us away from the other side. And it was really disheartening, to say the least. And I remember even thinking as a very small child, I'm pretty sure you are all missing the truth here. I think all of you are crazy, but all right. And
well, that's hard as a kid.
I came in having these experiences of being surrounded by beings that I could always hear, but not see. So I had angels that spoke to me, just like you and I are talking now.
Right.
I had guides. And as a small child, I didn't know this was unusual, so I would share openly about this with my family. I had premonitions, I had visions, the things that I saw would come true, and I would tell them this. And it didn't take them long to tell me that I was the work of the devil.
Yep.
And so they started having me believe that it was Satan speaking to me. All this is very dark, and that I must have come from evil, and all these other things. And
didn't I say this on The Exorcist? Brianna, your line's just a little bit quiet.
That I didn't want to deal with their abuse, so I tried to make myself more acceptable. I tried to be normal. I tried to make myself smaller, more like my sister, because clearly whatever I was is really threatening their perceptions and their ways of being, and they were extremely cruel about it. So the more I tried to bury myself, and I stopped listening to my intuition altogether, I stopped listening to my angels, I stopped listening to everything, I ended up getting myself into a world of hurt. Just as light attracts light, darkness attracts darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up for many years in a string of extremely abusive relationships. Some of them my family, some of them not. But I went through a very dark period of time and came close to death several times. And ultimately, really this is after meeting my husband. It was meeting my husband that kind of shook me out of all that and made me realize that I needed to listen to that voice inside. I finally started to pursue health again. I started trying to make sense of what had happened. And
do you find it interesting that you met a doctor?
I did some different things, and he was hurting too.
Talk about
so
having
together was helpful for both of us because we were both dealing with a very heavy trauma. And we tried all kinds of things, you know, self-help programs like Landmark and Avatar, traditional therapy, reading everything we could get our hands on. But unfortunately, none of it made that much of a difference. I feel like, at least for me, I got a little piece of something useful from everything that I studied. But at the end of the day, it was never enough to overcome the level of trauma that I was dealing with. And our marriage started to fall apart. And it was almost ironic because we both came from families that were abusive. Mine, I would call, pretty loveless. And I never thought I would find love like that. And so it was such a blessing for us to find each other. But then even the love we had for each other was not enough to overcome what we've been through and all the baggage we brought with us into this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So three kids in, we were on the brink of divorce. And not because we didn't want to be together, because we just could not manage to deal with our trauma. It just kept coming up and breaking down everything we had. So finally, one day, I confided in a friend of mine that I was at the end of my rope. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to save our relationship. And he said, I think I know someone who needs to meet. He said, he's kind of out there, so read his book first and see what you think. And, of course, at this point, I'm willing to try anything because I'm desperate to save this relationship because I know in my gut we belong together and that all this baggage belongs to other people. We just had to figure out how to deal with it, and we certainly didn't want to be putting it on our children.
Right.
So finally, I ordered this guy's book, and when it arrived, I didn't even need to open it, but it took me a while to read it because I saw his picture on the cover, and I had this very powerful and deep soul resonance with this person, and I realized he was the one I had been looking for. I didn't know how he was going to help us, but I knew that he would. So I called him, and we had a conversation. His name is Christopher Maher.
With him again? Your line's getting a little quiet. I'm not sure why. But
I knew him. I couldn't figure out how, but I knew I needed him. So anyway, we'll fast forward. My wonderful husband went to see him first. Do I still have you? Sorry, I'm rambling.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Can you hear me now or no? Hello, hello? The call.
Hello?
Yeah, okay, I thought so. All right, I got to call in.
Love Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Unmute.
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yes. I'm so sorry. I was going on and on, and I had no idea we didn't have a connection.
No, I knew something was wrong when because I had a bunch of questions for you.
I got to turn off my computer here. All right. So what happens is every once in a while, and this is one thing, one of the faults with Blog Talk, I've been trying to get him to fix this for a long time, that when it'll just drop your signal. Every once in a while, it'll just drop it. And so you don't know because we don't have DB meters. We don't have anything to tell us when it's dropped. So I have to take off my headset, take off my microphone, and basically put a bunch of books on and just call into my cell phone. So now I'm on my cell phone. This is like the backup plan.
No,
it was a great story, but you didn't hear a couple things I was saying because your line sounded a little quiet, and now I know why, because I had been cut off from my own show. But your story was fabulous. So don't worry about it. As long as you can hear me and everything's fine, I've unplugged the mic, we should be able to continue. I can still push all the buttons, so I can still, you know, give you more rounds of applause and things like that. But I had some, there's some interesting things that you were talking about. So first I want to get the name of the person again, because that was not as clear. So who's the healing genius here? Who's the person?
Oh, his name is Christopher Maher. And he has a book called Free for Life. And that's the one I ordered and saw his picture on the cover and knew he was the one.
Okay. Now, the reason I ask you is because a friend of mine, David Trombley, wrote a book, Grounded and Cured. And he's one of these guys that he didn't have the COVID shot, but he got bone cancer. And rather than go through chemo and all the things like that, he took a natural course, health, exercise, vitamins, supplements, you know, a great diet, and he cured himself of bone cancer. And so David Trombley is someone you might want to talk to because he's kind of like in the club too. And so he's a regular on the show. Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to.
We're just one big happy, family of warriors. Yeah, that's how it works. It's kind of interesting.
Isn't life wonderful now that this situation has forced us all to find each other and come together and expand our energy and our vision?
Well, this is fascinating too. So I have a theory about this as well. That the worldwide conspiracy, the people that want to control everything, which can never be done, by the way. I don't know what, you know, you look throughout history, Genghis Khan couldn't do it, you know, Alexander the Great couldn't do it, you know, Napoleon couldn't do it, Hitler couldn't do it. It doesn't work, folks. Stop trying to control the world. It ain't gonna happen, all right? But they still think that they can try. But here's what's interesting. The COVID shot in particular is killing and injuring the compliant. It's the mask wearers. It's the rebels. We're the ones that didn't take it. So they're actually, in a weird kind of way, you know, we rebels are doing a lot better. There's more of us now. And the compliant folks are sadly and tragically getting injured and killed by this COVID shot. So it definitely brought us together. But it's very interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because we were rebels individually.
You're right.
Now we're all rebels as one big happy family. So, yeah.
Yeah. Life's a lot more fun now. It's much less lonely than it used to be.
Well, now that's another thing too. See, that was part of the thing. We always thought we were separate. So when I was going through, you know, a couple of years of depression, as I call it, you know, walking neck deep in molasses, and where you just don't care. You just don't care about anything. Nothing matters to you. I don't know if that made it my initial chat or not. I didn't want to do anything to hurt myself, but I knew I just didn't care. And I knew I was going to get through it. I didn't medicate. I took, I think, one of those so-called antidepressant pills, just one. Not a whole bottle, just one. And I felt so miserable. I thought, I'm never going to do this again. I felt like I was like seasick. This is ridiculous. I said, this is what people think to cure this kind of stuff? Said, no. So I just worked through it. Yeah, it's painful. Yeah, it hurt. It's the toughest thing I've ever done other than being married. Actually, marriage was worse. It lasted longer. I'm not a big marriage fan. I can't recommend it. But the struggle. But once you come out the other side, once you've seen the psychopaths, you know how to recognize them. You beat them, you come out of the cave, and now you can do anything. We're like, you know, we're all knights in shining armor out here. You know, we're all Don Quixote. You know, we can right the wrongs. We can, look at me, I'm starting a citizen legislature on a radio show. Well, Greg, that's never been done before. Okay, yeah, and what's your point? Then I'll do it. Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to start this process. Might as well be me. Yeah, anyway. So your family... The weird part is, you know, here they are, supposedly loving parents, and they probably thought they were doing the right thing in calling you the Antichrist or whatever it was they were doing. How did they resolve this? You know, I mean, is it probably another nerves? I mean, how did they did they understand what they were doing? Did they have a clue, or were you so totally distant at that point?
Let's see. I haven't talked to either of my parents in about 10 years. They want nothing to do with me, which is okay. I feel very differently post dealing with my trauma. You know, when I was young, I really resented it. I was very angry at them. And I thought, you know, how could they not see that what they were doing was so wrong? And hypocrisy
right.
deeply offended me. You know, they're so religious and preaching all of this dogma. And on the other side of their mouth, they were torturing me. And I wasn't alone. It was essentially anyone who did not conform to their ideals. And it was very painful. But now, in retrospect, I can see, I really do think, it wasn't just that they were doing the best they could. I think it's all they could do because, of course, they were really just at the mercy of their own trauma that was unresolved,
okay.
that had been projected on them by their parents and every generation before that.
So what do we do with these millions of people out there that are still suffering, that will never try something different, that will never break out of their mold? They're so in the prison of their conditioning. You know, people say, do you think outside the box? I say, there is no box. They're like, what? So there is no box. I don't think outside something that doesn't exist. I just think, you know, wait, what are you talking about? Because if you think outside the box, there's still a box, you know? And so I go, what? You know, and you tell people that, they're like, huh, well, you can use that. Feel free. Everything I say is fair game. I you know, but if you think like there is no box, then you're ultimately free. So how do you know? I feel privileged too. And I've told people this before, that without 2 years of depression, there'd be no Action Radio. There wouldn't, because I'd still be conditioned.
Wow.
So what I did in 2 years is broke through my condition, not only for me, but for the problems I had, but for everything, my entire life's conditioning. Went through step by step, analyzed everything from day one, worked it all through, and now I don't have to do that again. Now I've got to the rest of my life, you know, to play, have fun, fly jets, and save the world, and create freedom, and do all the things I'm doing now. It's great. Talk to people like you. Love it.
That's so wonderful.
But it's such a freeing. Thank you. It's such a freeing feeling, though. I mean, don't you feel free now?
Absolutely. In fact, that is the very word that I would use, and
okay.
I want everyone else to have this, to have this incredible freedom. Because when you're in freedom, there is no fear. There's nothing to be afraid of because you realize you are the co-creator of your experience. So there's nothing to be afraid of, quite literally. And I have this conversation with Joe and with Christopher, actually, all the time about how do we bring this to other people. And I feel like energetically right now in the world, we are rapidly approaching a point, if, in fact, we're not there already, I don't know the answer to that, where everyone is going to have to make a very conscious choice. And you are either going to have to be willing to do whatever work it takes to deal with your emotional baggage and everything else, all the trauma that you're carrying around and poisoning the well with, or you can continue refusing to deal with it and pretending that it doesn't exist and willingly acquiescing to be programmed and controlled. And I think you will, forgive me for saying this, but one way or another, you will no longer be supported on Earth. I think
no longer be what on Earth?
Supported. I don't think you'll be able to remain here. I think the energies that are in operation right now are going to force the issue. So those who have done the work and are willing to move forward authentically and powerfully will survive, and others will not.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That might sound like a radical thing to say.
I thought we're moving to another planet and starting again somewhere. That's what when you say we're leaving the Earth. But that's a good question.
Perhaps. I don't know, but I don't think they'll be here.
Well, look at it, exactly. But look at the world the way it exists. We've got the you know, from the World Economic Forum, the Gates folks, the UN, you know, our own deep state. It's all control. They want us with no property and eating bugs. You know, it's and they think this is okay. You know, I've heard everything from knocking down the population to, but it all comes down to control. If you want to control other people, you're a sick person. You can't have authority, you know, and the people that don't want to control other people are the ones who aren't running for office anyway, because we don't want the responsibility. It's not up to us to control other people. We want people to be happy and do their own thing, you know. And so it's this weird situation that the people that are the worst possible people to be in charge are the people that are most obsessed with being in charge. That's a problem. I don't know how to resolve that. So we have to control the controllers, and that's what the Constitution is supposed to do, and that's what some of the other things are supposed to do. But something you mentioned earlier was really interesting. When you talk about how everybody cleared the streets, fear the one element that, that we haven't talked about, because you and I don't have fear, right? I'm not afraid of death. You know, I've got God. Life's great. I'm going to do as much as I can here. But I feel almost a separation from my own body now, that my soul's already got a place to go. It's okay. You know, I don't mind taking a chance.
I have that experience as well.
Tell me.
Yep, I've had that same experience. Well, especially in the last, it's been going on for about 10 years, but very, very much in the last 3 to 4 years, I increasingly feel that I am on the earth, but not of the earth. So I mean, I'm certainly here. I am present. I am doing powerful energetic work, but my soul, I very much feel, is off doing other things. And it's to the point where sometimes I even question my sanity, because I will literally forget what year.
I'm there with you. Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. So don't forget your sanity. Just enjoy the ride. It's almost like, it's almost like God reaching down and saying, you know what? Yeah, it's like God giving you a preview. Okay, I'm gonna show you a little bit of where your spirit's going. So just don't worry, everything's fine. But
I'm truly, truly not. Mostly I say that in jest, but it's gotten so extreme. I feel like COVID kind of started it, at least started me really noticing it, because prior to COVID, we had all these daily markers, right, by which we measure our day, our productivity. You know, the alarm goes off, we spend this much time getting ready, we drop the kids off at school this time, you know, work, and so on and so on. And when all of that disappeared, we were left with this massive void, like this space. And you could choose to either slink into misery, self-pity, fear, what have you, or you could say, wow, you know, I actually control this time and my experience. And for Joe and I, it really helped us realize how little time we were spending together and with our kids, even though we were making every effort to do so, how much time we were wasting doing things that ultimately do not make a difference in the world. You know, like, is the world a better place an hour looking just so for work? No, of course not. That was, my time would be much better spent in meditation with my children, you know, with coaching a child, with a client. And so it really took COVID to shake us loose from those bonds. Right.
Yeah, but it's such conditioning. So, excuse me for saying so, but someone as naturally gorgeous as you doesn't need to spend a lot of time with makeup. You just don't.
Thank you.
You've
made my day.
You're welcome. So, yeah, just get out there in the world and do stuff. You know, take that hour that you would have spent with makeup and just go help people. Just talk to people. You don't need to, you're fine. But
so much of that was a voice in my head saying, you know, and even after I'd done some work, it was saying, you have to look a certain way. You have to be a certain way. You have to conform to a certain ideal. And so COVID was so wonderful for me personally, because I shook free of all of that and then was quite unwilling to resume any of it when people tried to put me back into that place. I was totally unwilling to go.
But
it's just been so helpful. Yeah.
But they had mass psychosis. I heard about it from Malone and McCullough. They were on the show, but I originally picked up from a Joe Rogan podcast. I started looking into, and there's a great website, YouTube channel called Academy of Ideas, and they talk about the mass psychosis. I've even got the many conditions that I don't want to go into right now, but this fear that people, you know, there were two kinds of people, those that weren't afraid and that didn't wear a mask, because, I mean, I had COVID back before I knew what COVID was, first week in January 2020. So as soon as they talk about the symptoms, it's like, oh, I just have that. I'm fine. I don't even ask. I'm not going to lock down. When Governor DeSantis talked about his stay-at-home program, he said, well, we're now instituting the stay-at-home program, safer at home. I said, screw you, DeSantis. And I went down, I rolled down my windows, hopped in my car, drove, and put up the country music as loud as I could, and sang music out the window. So screw you. That was my reaction.
For you.
That was my reaction. I drove from DeCrestfield and back. I said, this is my reaction to your stay-at-home program. I'm driving, singing country music out the window so that they're down. No. I'm just a rebel. Much more fun. But
you're my people.
Fear. Well, let me play you something. So here's my reaction to COVID. I made a great video, which I'll send you. But I started making all these sarcastic satire pieces, because everything was closed. I had this extra time on my hands, right? And so my favorite one is the new normal church and grocery store, which I shall now play for you at this time.
All right.
Hello, America. Looks like millions of you are in states where the governor dictator has said that food is essential, but God is not. Fortunately, we have a solution for you. We've combined your essential food shopping with a non-essential religious experience. Being in the same building and being completely intertwined, you can't do one without the other. Welcome to the New Normal Church and Grocery Store. Yes, the New Normal Church and Grocery Store is the first business of its kind to bring God conveniently into your food shopping aisle. Think of this as food for your body and food for your soul. No social distance or group size restrictions here. Upon entering the New Normal Church and Grocery Store, you will pick up your shopping cart. You can then choose from an optional mask with a Star of David, a cross, a crescent moon, a sun for you Shintos, a statue of Buddha, and for you agnostics, a question mark. Headsets are available to play sermons throughout your shopping experience. Some of the favorites include I'm Going to Heaven and You're Not, Die Infidel Die, Oi, What Not to Say During the Bris, and That Butterfly May Be Your Grandfather. To orient you to the store, the Kosher Jewish Deli is by the Western Wall. A simple shalom gets you service, but be prepared to haggle. For you Muslims, out of courtesy, we put the Halal Butcher by the Eastern Wall. Sharia store policies require the wearing of both a burqa and a mask, just to be safe. Protestants will find the Wonder Bread, hot dogs, and steak in the central aisles, where all the best-dressed customers can also be found. When you notice the smell of incense, you are nearing the Buddhist section, which is all vegetarian. For Catholics, communion is available in the bakery department by the wafers near the red wine section. Agnostics should go directly to customer service because you folks have no idea what you want anyway. Be sure to offer your confessional to the checker on the way out if you so choose. Please don't forget to first pull down the blind on the plexiglass screen. And if you require ministering, you can talk to your bagger as they push your groceries to your car because all our baggers are cross-trained in theology. The New Normal Church and Grocery Store, your combination alternatives to the separation of church by the state.
So that's what I just did during the lockdown.
Oh, we got to say the round of applause for you. That was amazing.
Oh, I can do that. Hang on, let me scroll back up here.
Well deserved.
Yeah, thank you. Here we go. Unaccustomed as I am hearing myself. Yeah,
it was beautiful. It perfectly highlights the absurdity that we were living through. This one day I was taking a walk on the beach with a friend of mine, and it was right in the thick of lockdown. So there was not another soul on that beach as far as I could see. So we're walking, and of course we're outside and maskless because of course. And I hear footsteps coming up behind us, and I turn around, and God bless her, this little old lady wearing two masks ran right up to me, got in my face within an inch of me, and yelled at me for not wearing a mask. And I think my heart broke and I burst out laughing. And all I could think to do was hug her. I tried to give her a hug, and then she had a meltdown and ran away. I just thought, this is the most absurd thing that has ever happened.
Oh, my goodness, the Karen Patrol. And she's old.
Yes, and
now
she shows.
Now, you think older folks.
Several hundred NPRs.
Oh, my God. You think older folks have a little more sense, especially if they've been through wars. You know, I don't know how many folks are still around from the Depression and World War II, but there's probably a few. You know, people who lived through horrible, tragic times and all this kind of crazy stuff with the 60s or anything else, and now they're telling you you have to wear a mask. You know, if you go to my Facebook page, I found the picture that has the directions, which says it does not prevent the spread of viruses. It's right there in the box.
Good.
It was on the box for years.
My goodness.
And yet, people never read the directions. I say no, people don't read. It says right there in the box, will not stop the transmission of viruses. COVID, folks, just in case anybody doesn't know, is a virus, okay? You know, the expression was, it's like a mosquito flying through a chain link fence. I was more graphic. I said it's like a mosquito flying through an open garage door. Okay, folks, viruses are really small, really small. You know, cotton fibers, paper fibers, they're a lot bigger, you know, than your basic virus.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was, but a doctor did this great viral video where he was smoking. He took a drag on a cigarette, put a mask on, and then exhaled. And, of course, the smoke comes billowing through the mask. And people were so angry at him. It was great. I wish I could remember who it was.
Well, that's funny. But the other one was the study in Town Hall magazine, which reported all these parents that had their kids, you know, they took the mask their kids were wearing for 8 hours, and they had them cultured in a lab. And they had pneumonia bacteria and all this other bacteria and germs, and it was just like growing thick with all this stuff on it. and the masks were actually dangerous, you know. And
oh, yeah.
I don't know how much you want to talk about health policy, but I want to get Dr. Latipal on at some point if we can, because there's so much I want to talk to him about. But just, you know, just your observations, you know, as a healer and an intuitive person, why were people so scared? What, you know, did they think that they were doing fine for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of flu every year that was different, and all of a sudden this was something unusual and they needed two masks for it? What happened?
You know, I have spent the past few years trying to figure this out. So the people in my circle,
okay,
as a naturopath, were already a lot, let's call them more hip to the game. So they
right.
were a lot less
yeah.
likely to react that way and be afraid. But as far as Joe's colleagues, and a lot of these were friends of both of ours, people we had known for years, you know, academic people who are supposed to be thought leaders. And the vast majority of these people dropped us immediately when we, well, first we refused to comply, and then also we weren't seeing a lot of each other when the lockdown started, because I was trying to homeschool our kids and work from home, and he was in the hospital taking care of patients. So every Tuesday, we started having a brief daytime date just to stay in touch, and we'd go get our takeout because nothing was open, and we'd go sit on
right.
the beach and just talk, you know, conversations about what we were both seeing in our respective professions and what was happening. And he would tell me unbelievable stories of people who are literally trained in how to handle things like this, just losing it.
Right.
Residents who refuse to go into anybody's room and treat someone who's actively bleeding to death that has nothing to do with the virus. Just the level of fear. And back at home, I was dealing with other families from my kids' schools before we'd pulled them out, people that we had been friends with and spent a lot of time with, who suddenly refused to see or speak to us because we had dared suggest that perhaps there was an approach other than losing your mind. So
yeah,
things were getting really bad really quickly, and we were trying to figure this out too. Like, what are people actually afraid of? And I hate to say that.
Great question.
And of course it's multifaceted and it's a difficult response, but in our little, on our little hill of the world at that time, most of the people we knew were very highly educated because, you know, we'd been friends for 20 years. We'd either gone to school together or ended up on a similar career path. And this is mostly who we hung out with. And
okay.
by and large, 99% of these people were terrified of COVID, immediately did what they were told, and adopted this policy that we were destructive, evil people for not just rolling over, you know, for not taking this at face value. And that was shocking to me because these are the same people who are, well, who I thought were taught about viruses, taught to do research, taught about health policy. Like, these are the people we rely on to create the policies that keep the rest of us safe.
Not anymore.
Where not anymore. And then, you know, in
yeah.
my world, over on the other side of it, I have, you know, hippies and naturopaths and people who are into crystals. And by the way, all these things describe me as well to many people.
Oh, yeah.
I'm considered.
I have wellness people. I've had wellness people for years on the show. You're among friends. You know, this is like wellness central.
Like,
you know, Tommy, don't worry about it.
So for the people in that space, in that part of my life, every single one of them had serious questions like we did. And it got to the point where I could basically anticipate that if you were very highly educated, went to grad school in any of the sciences, you were probably going to end up on the opposite end of the spectrum as us. And it forced me to look at indoctrination in schools and where it was starting. And so at that very same time, I have three little kids at home. Our Max was just a tiny baby at the time, and my other little guys were in preschool and first grade. And it had never for a second occurred to me that I should be questioning what they were being taught at that age. Because, you know, it's like Play-Doh, right? Play-Doh, playgrounds, learning not to
yeah.
push people down. And it never
came
occurred
the
to me.
The learning at home. Then it came to Zoom
oh,
calls at home. Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, this is how that happened. So when they started, you know, at first it was 2 weeks. We're going to lock down for 2 weeks. And even that sent
right.
Joe and I into a panic because we had our life worked out, but, you know, just so. We thought, okay,
yeah,
two
messing
weeks
with
we
you
can
again.
Do this.
They're messing with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this, of course, evolved into 2 months and ultimately 2 years. And the solution was to put kids online, which is ironic because, of course, the year before, the American Pediatric Academy had said children under a certain age should have zero screen time. And up to, I can't remember what it was, maybe 12 or so, it should be very, very limited.
Right.
And so there was no
way.
Isn't
it funny how things change to accommodate
so
the new policies? Isn't that amazing? Yeah. It's amazing how fast they change. Yeah.
Amazing. So since I was not about to do that, and
right.
we decided to homeschool, and I didn't have any experience in that, so the first thing he did was contact the schools to get the curriculum, hoping to just kind of pick up where they left off and do the best we could at home. Well, lo and behold, even at the age my kids are, not so much my preschool baby, but my first grader, there were some very questionable ideas in these textbooks. And mostly it was just slipping in inferences and phrasing things in a way that, you know, it would either try to normalize an idea I didn't necessarily agree with or muddy the line, if you will. Like, for example, they would slip the word. Exactly. Well, and that's really when it hit me that it wasn't just college and grad school, you know, the Ivy League that was the problem, that it actually was starting in kindergarten and we just didn't know. So for me, I do think education, or I should say classical education in this country, public education is a big part of the problem. And I have to admit,
I would abolish it.
I really didn't.
I wanted to abolish it. I'll tell you what. We're at the top of the hour, but we get overtime here, so we can talk for a while. If you got the time, I got another up to an hour actually, which is fine with me. I don't care. Yeah. But here's what I was saying when the schools first closed. I said this is a golden opportunity. I said the schools are closed. The teachers are on beaches in Argentina. You know, they're taking their money, taking all the tax money. They're out of here. They're hanging out. They're in, you know, Montego Bay, Jamaica, right? I said, now that the teachers are gone, the administrators are gone, the school boards are gone, I said, close all the government schools. Close them. Sell them. Get rid of them. Fire all the teachers. Start again with a completely privatized system. Sell all the school buildings to private entrepreneurs. And this is like March, April of 2020. I said, they're gone. We've got the whole summer to do this. So in the fall, we'll have a completely privatized education system. And people were like, oh, that's a stupid idea. Oh, you can't do that. Oh, we needed public education. You know, I went to public school and I turned it out okay, to which I say, how do you know? But that's another story. Anyway, I advocated closing all the government schools, starting fresh. Everybody said it was a nut. Then, of course, they opened up again, went back to all the problems that they had before, and they're like, oh, gee, yeah, you're right, Greg. Maybe we should have tried it. I said, I told you. I said, this was the window.
Yeah,
the window's
like
closed
it.
Now. You can't do it. You know, so you gotta, there's times when you have to move fast, and that was one of those times to move fast. And the county wouldn't do it, and the state wouldn't do it, and obviously the country didn't do it, but California would never do it. But there are places that might have. South Dakota, Kristi Noem, my favorite governor, never locked down anything. And
oh,
would have,
amazing.
You know, that would have been a great time that if they're mandated, if, I don't know if the school's closed or not, but that would have been the time to close them all down while the teachers are gone, everybody's gone, just sell the buildings, and start fresh with the private system. Could have done it. That's how I think.
Incredible.
No
I
box.
I like it. Well, I do think that
there
we are
no
approaching
box.
No, there is no box. And I do think we are approaching a reality where we are going to have to burn down every system we have and recreate
mm-hmm.
it
yep.
in a divine way
now,
to have a world
that
works
that.
For everyone.
Oh, are you on the right show? Because you know that's the whole purpose of that story. No, seriously, that's the whole purpose of Action Radio, is that we the people give – yeah, it is. That's why you're here. Well, I think, partially. Well, you're here for a lot of reasons. One, we're like, you know, soul teammates. You know, we're on the same team here, which is really interesting. But Action Radio, I created Action Radio starting in 2014. I literally had one of those, you know, God experiences. I'm bike riding on San Francisco Bay. I'm over on the Oakland side, and I'm having a great time. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm running this little dialogue in my head like I usually do, kind of like Socrates without Socrates. And I'm saying, you know, I want to be the world's greatest talk show host. I want to do something no one's ever done. I said, talk radio is great. I said, but all they do is talk. They never take any action. I said, what we really need is Action Radio. I went, oh, no.
Oh,
stop my
it.
Bicycle. Yes! And then so the next few years kind of visualized exactly what Action Radio was. Now here we are. We have a citizen legislature. We have bill writers across the country. We have the most amazing legislation. I had a bill to disarm the entire federal bureaucracy. We have bills that would overturn Plyler v. Doe. We have bills that would get rid of judicial review. We have bills to handle electromagnetic pulse. We have a bill we're writing, one of my folks is writing, to put a massive tax on electric cars. You know, we cover so many different areas. Mine are the big ones, vaccine liability, getting rid of big tech censorship, all these different kinds of things that we do. And this is the answer that you're looking for. I mean, it really is. And people are like, oh, gee, that's kind of arrogant, isn't it? Well, I ain't bragging if you can do it. Thank you, Yogi Berra. You know, but this is a place where you can literally write laws, and then we send them to Congress and state legislators. And, in fact, I wrote a couple I'll send you that I wrote for the special session in Florida like a year and a half ago, a real parental bill of rights and a real bill to handle quarantines. You know, this is what we do here. We have an election integrity bill that's perfect. Now I got a question for you, because Mike Lindell and all these other folks, Reawaken America and all these different things, they have all these events where they sit there and complain. I call it raising complaining to an art form. I've never been invited. We've got the bills that would solve their problems. Are people more interested in complaining as job security than actually fixing the problems? What do you think?
Outside of our tribe, yes. I do think so. Now, that said, there are so many amazing people who are really out there hustling and trying to make a difference, but it's a smaller group of people than I had hoped. And so just this morning, I was chatting with my boxing coach who still lives in L.A., so he gives me updates about how things are going out there. And he was telling me that he was just in Trader Joe's and was getting hassled for not wearing a mask. And this is yesterday.
What, again? Still?
Yes. Can you believe that? And
I need to make a T-shirt. Masks don't work. And just wear that in public.
I think that the people who are still engaging in this, you could smack them in the face with a sandwich board full of data and they would still call you crazy, because I think they're getting something out of it. It's almost like
all of
this is giving them purpose. I think it's giving their life purpose.
Huh.
I think that it's giving them the hit of significance and power that they've never had in their whole lives. And so they've become so invested in this, especially when the media started preying on people's morality. That, you know, you're killing grandma if you're not wearing a mask. If you're not vaccinated, you're responsible for the deaths of X, Y, and Z number of people. And I think that really hit a nerve with people who did not feel powerful or accomplished or like they matter in their own lives. And so I think in a way they are getting off on this and are in no hurry to relinquish that control. Because if you accept that you are responsible for your own experience, then you actually have to get up and do something. Right? And that's really scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, it goes to, it's almost like the people that didn't get elected to Congress, didn't get their job as a cop, they're all like the wannabes. They're the worst of the wannabes that were disqualified for some reason from a position of authority. This is their new authority. They get to yell and scream and complain.
Yeah.
I watched videos in New York of people were screaming and throwing things. You have to get out of the store. You're going to kill us all.
Yeah.
And facts don't matter. The fact that we had the flu bug, you know, that kills, you know, a lot more people than COVID ever did, and that comes around every year. The fact that all these different things happen, but there's some kind of weird psychology that medicine can, I guess, you know, prevent you from ever getting sick or dying. And that this vaccine is looked upon, first of all, as not, I shouldn't say vaccine, this gene shot, this COVID shot is looked upon as some kind of, I don't know. It's almost taken on a religious significance. It's like a baptism. It's like you're one of us now. You've been baptized.
Yeah.
You got the COVID shot. You're one of us. You're not one of them. Mm-hmm. Even though we know asymptomatic transfer doesn't work. You know, you got to have a symptom. You got to be coughing and hacking something, or nothing's going to transfer, folks. You know, it's like the brains went out the window. Yeah, the brains went out the window. Now you don't have a health degree, but you got a master's. You had to think. You had to write a thesis. You actually relate things. Did you ever take a course in logic? Was that ever presented in school?
No. It was awkward, but frankly, I do not ever want to sound obnoxious, but I thought it's a shame that needs to be offered. One of my favorite books as a child was Common Sense, but I thought it was hysterical that it was even necessary to bring that into being. Like, at what point did Common Sense and logic disappear so that you had to start teaching it? Like, why do you have to teach critical thinking as a skill? That pains me. And it's funny you mentioned Mass being almost a religious experience because, and I should preface this by saying I would never insult someone's religion, way of believing. You know, we're all on our own journey. We all have our own path and our own ideas that speak to us. But organized religion has done a great job instilling the fear of death in people. And without a healthy fear of your own mortality, none of this would have worked. If people weren't living in fear of death, if they didn't realize that you're an eternal spirit having a temporary physical experience, they wouldn't have been so terrified. You wouldn't have been able to control them with threats of, you know, death and masking and all this nonsense.
Yeah, it's so wild because we all know, logically, we're going to die someday. You know, there are those who believe nothing happens. There are those who believe you go to heaven. There are those who believe all kinds of things. But we all accept the reality because we've seen it intrinsically through the entire history of humankind that people die. Given that, given that you only have so much time, you want to accomplish what you want to accomplish, but you can't stop that. But you can stay healthy for a whole long time. You know, and part of the way that you stay healthy is using your brain. What makes sense? You know, fads. Remember when oat bran used to be the big fad, and now we're gluten-free? Yes. What is oat bran? Pure gluten. Okay?
Yeah.
So people, they lose their brain. They lose their lives. So logically, they know they're going to die, but somehow they think emotionally they can cheat it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. So emotions are stronger than logic. Yeah. Well, as I say on the show here, assumptions are stronger than truth. People will go to their grave with their assumptions rather than accept the truth. Even as presented right to them.
It's too scary for many people.
So where...
That was another thing. Oh, what?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that the other thing that struck me during the pandemic was that for as much propaganda as was being pushed on us... Sorry, stop my alarm here. I'm going to have to go get my kids in about 5 minutes.
Well, that's fine. Hey, listen,
for as much propaganda as being shoved down our
throats... We'll talk again.
Oh, this has been fun. Yeah, definitely. I can't believe how fast it flew by. But you didn't have anybody out there talking about these real basic ways we know to stay healthy. Like, no one was talking about decent nutrition, you know, getting out. They were saying run and hide in your house, not get out and get some sunshine and some exercise and hydrate, you know, have strong social connections. But everything they were saying to do flies right in the face of everything that we know makes us healthy. And nobody was questioning
I think the reason. I have a theory. I think you're going to find this interesting. Everything that was done to preserve COVID, not to save lives. The worst thing you can do is go home because everybody has the same genetics, basically. That's how the disease spreads, right? That's why you get sick from your kids. The worst thing you can do is not exercise because now your immune system's down. The worst thing you can do is stress because your immune system's down. Everything they did, from lockdowns to social distance to masks to everything else, was designed to create stress, to lower the immune system, so that when they finally got their gene shot ready, people would accept it because they were all getting sick. Not because of COVID, but because the government had reduced everybody's immune system, except those of us who realized we were already immune. I didn't care. I was fine. I've never been so healthy since I had COVID, by the way. It's kind of interesting. But do you think all these government policies, I'll talk about that another time. But do you think the government policies, as I think, were designed to preserve COVID, not to stop it?
100%. I think they would say or do anything to preserve that narrative because they had to sell that vaccine. And
the COVID itself.
I think the only purpose of COVID was really to get the vaccine into people.
Which came first?
We'll have to have a longer conversation at some point.
Yeah. So one more question, and no, I got your book information. Which came first, the vaccine or the virus? Which was made first?
That's a good question, and I really can't answer that. And I suspect that since they were working on coronavirus vaccines in general all throughout the 80s, that this was probably, at least in someone's thought process, years before whatever it is they're calling COVID appeared on the scene. But honestly, these days, I question absolutely everything. So unless I hear it straight from God or I see some pretty compelling data, I think it could go either way.
Yeah, I agree. I think the vaccine was created first, and then they engineered the virus around it. Okay, you got to go in 3 minutes or 2 minutes. Tell me about the book, where to get it, and anything else you want. You've got as much time as you have left. I'll just sit here and listen because this has been fun. And thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. This has flown by. My book is called Emerging from Darkness, and it's available at most of the major sellers. It's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, Target even, all those kinds of places. And I do have a website. It's just my full name, www.briannalatipo.com, if anyone wants to know about upcoming signings or events or anything like that. But it really has been my pleasure to be on today. Thank you so much for having me, for letting me ramble on. I'd love to come back because you are so much fun to talk to.
Well, thank you very much. Well, let me send you some bills. Let's start acting. Let's start doing stuff. I have some people I think you might want to meet, like David Trombley, who cured himself. Laura Bartlett, who has documents for people going to the hospital, you know, and you already know Judy Mikovits, you know, she's amazing.
Yeah.
And I forgot to mention Christiane Northup, who's been on the show a few times, wrote the foreword to your book. She's pretty amazing.
She did. And I am such an admirer of her. She is one of my heroes and actually has been since I was a little girl. Her book, Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom, was one of the first I ever read that mirrored the experience I was having. So I've loved her for 30 years, and it's been just such an incredible blessing to get to know her and have her write my forward. I'm deeply honored.
Yeah, this is great. Oh, my next project, by the way, I'm trying to get Trump and Robert Kennedy to do a town hall meeting together. That's my next project. So,
that would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah, exactly. Brianna Latipo, thank you so much for being on the show. You should probably go, otherwise we'll just talk for another hour. And come on back anytime. you don't need an invitation.
Here's something
on the show. Just I got your number. Just dial it. You'll be fine.
You got it. Well, thank you so much. Right. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Great. Thank you very much, too. You take care.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm
going to
play all the stuff I should have played. Goodbye now. I'll play all the stuff I should have played in the first couple of hours. Here we go.
Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive, conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. you make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.